last year was us not being told the status of the attacker.
Police should disclose the ethnicity of people who are charged with crimes in this country. That at least is the demand from Nigel Farage today, as tensions mount over a new spate of crimes that are alleged to have been committed by asylum seekers. So what do we make of that idea? Is it a good one? Just a transparent way to give us more information about who is really responsible for criminality in this country? Is it a recipe for disaster, for even more division, maybe even more violence? And is it just pandering to racists? Call me now, 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Winds of more than 120 miles an hour have been recorded in the Scottish Highlands as Storm Floris batters the central belt and northern areas. More than 32,000 homes have been left without power. Tonight's Royal Edinburgh Military Tattoo was cancelled, and our Scotland reporter Rebecca Brady says there'll be other problems too.
Exam results are due to be delivered tomorrow for school children across Scotland, but we're hearing there'll definitely be delays in the Outer Hebrides, Orkney and Shetland. The transport network's been delayed around bridges and fallen trees too.
An amber weather warning is in place for much of the country until 11 o'clock tonight. Officers investigating reports of an alleged assault at St Pancras Station a week ago have tonight arrested a 42-year-old man at Luton Airport. It comes after a video emerged online appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson next to a man lying motionless on the ground. The cousin of an Israeli hostage who was captured looking emaciated in a video released by Hamas has told LBC he thinks he has days left. Downing Street has described the footage of 24-year-old Eviata David in a dimly lit tunnel in Gaza completely abhorrent. Matan Eshet has told LBC how his family felt seeing the video.
It made us feel broken, like terror actually invaded our own home again. And if we had any glimpse of hope that he's being treated with some sort of respect, we saw that for them he's an experiment, he's a tool to be used.
Hamas has agreed to work with the Red Cross to bring hostages more food, but only if a permanent aid corridor is opened up in Gaza. Health officials in the Strip say five Palestinians died of starvation yesterday. A four-year-old girl's died after an incident at an indoor water park in Staffordshire. Emergency services were called to Waterworld in Hanley this afternoon. An investigation into her death is now underway. And a year on from violent disorder breaking out across the UK following the Southport stabbings, police have renewed searches for those who took part. The faces of more than 50 people officers want to speak to have been posted on a national police website. In the city, the FTSE 100 closed up 59 points at 91.28. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, heavy rain and winds for the far north and northeast Scotland tonight. Showers for the rest of Scotland, Northern Ireland and North England. A low of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm James Kitchen.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
10:03 is the time. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC right through until 1 o'clock. Hope you're very well tonight. Great to have you with us on the show.
I'm just a girl. I'm relatable. I'm sort of the girl next door vibes. And I want people to be able to watch my videos and be able to imagine themselves in it.
A new row today over Bonnie Blue, the woman who shot to fame, or infamy perhaps, for having sex with 1,000 men in one day. Now advertisers are running a mile, and even the government says it might ban some of what she does. Why do people feel so strongly about this woman? And what does her success, and by the way, she's raking it in financially, tell us about the world we live in? We'll discuss, and...
The UK will recognise the state of Palestine in September unless the Israeli government takes substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza.
After that from Keir Starmer last week, now the UK government says it won't necessarily demand that Hamas release its remaining hostages before the UK recognises an independent state of Palestine. How on earth have they come to that decision? Details to come.
0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
tonight, you'll probably be familiar with those statements that the police put out whenever they arrest somebody. You've probably heard them read out here on LBC or elsewhere. A 41-year-old man from Westminster has been arrested on suspicion of murder. A 63-year-old woman from Plymouth is in custody, accused of, I don't know, illegal fox hunting or something. You know the sort of statement I'm talking about. They tell us the sex of the person, how old they are, where they live, and what it is they're accused of. And then if they're charged, we get a bit more information, including their name. But there is one vital bit of information, one crucial detail that is missing from those statements the police put up. And what is missing, what the detail is that they should be telling us, whenever somebody is charged with a crime, is what ethnicity the alleged perpetrator is. So in addition to the rest of the information I just mentioned, we'd be told it is, I don't know, an Afghan man in custody or a Polish woman, or quite possibly, in fact, most likely, a white British person. That at least is the demand from Nigel Farage today, who has called on police to disclose the ethnicity of people who are arrested and indeed charged with criminal offences. And I'm interested in your thoughts on whether that is or isn't a good idea. Here's Farage explaining his logic.
What caused unrest on our streets after Southport last year was us not being told the status of the attacker. That led to crazy conspiracy theories spreading online. You know, we do understand and respect the contempt of court rules. But, you know, I'm going to go back and quote Jonathan Hall KC, the independent reviewer of terrorism legislation, a watchdog over this area, you know, who said in the wake of Southport that governments should stop hiding behind contempt of court rules. People need to be given reasonable truth.
So his argument, you heard it there, is that it's better if this information is made public. You'll remember after the Southport attack, the speculation about who might or might not have been responsible for it, the confusion, the fake news, people getting angry because they were believing stuff that wasn't true, and the police not, at that point, giving the ethnicity of the suspect. That's what's prompted some of this. And tonight, Nigel Farage finds an unlikely ally. A man who goes by the name of Sir Keir Starmer, it seems. You might have heard of him. According to tomorrow's Times newspaper, Downing Street is also now urging police forces to be, as they put it, as transparent as possible in order, their words, to rebuild public trust. That, according to government sources quoted by the Times. So is this a good idea if both Keir Starmer and Nigel Farage are rarely united on this issue, that police should be telling us the ethnicity of people that are accused of committing crimes? Is it something that should simply happen as quickly as possible? Is it a way, as Downing Street suggests, to rebuild public trust? I've got to say I'm not convinced. I've got to say I worry. I'm not saying I'm against it. I can see the argument, but I worry about what this means in practice, because I am very dubious of the idea that this will reduce tension, that this will mean there will be less violence rather than more of those two things. Because frankly, there are people in this country, let's be honest, who shrug their shoulders and don't really care a jot when a crime is committed or an allegation is made against somebody who is white and British, whether that's sexual crime, whether that's rape, whether that's grooming, whatever it is, any other type of offence. But as soon as that allegation is made against somebody who is not white British, they're angry, they're posting on social media about it, they're protesting about it, maybe they're even rioting about it. So if the police start disclosing the ethnicity of every person who's been charged with a crime, is that not just going to lead to more tension, more protests, even more riots potentially, rather than less of all of the above? Or is it a good idea? 03456060973. You might remember there is a precedent for this, that when a car was driven into crowds of celebrating Liverpool fans earlier this year, police did disclose that the man in custody was white British. Is that not just pandering to racism? Is all of this not just pandering to racism? Or is it, in your view, a good idea? Transparency, fairness, openness, call it what you want. 03456060973. Should the police be disclosing the ethnicity of people who are arrested or charged with criminal offences? What would that achieve if you think the answer to that question is yes? Give me a call on that number. You can WhatsApp me the same main number or text tonight 84850 to let me know what you think on whether that is a good idea.
Your calls to come in just a moment. Let's talk first this evening to Dal Babu, former chief superintendent in the Metropolitan Police. Dal, great to have you on the programme tonight. Is this a good suggestion? Both Keir Starmer and Nigel Farage seem to think it is. What do you think, sir?
The genie's out of the bottle. In the past, the authorities could control what information was in the public domain. I think the Liverpool incident that you've referenced, Ben, is probably the catalyst here. There was images circulating of the suspect. In addition to that, there was false images circulating of a Asian person, which was circulated many, many times. And that false information that was being circulated by the far right was basically designed to whip up racial tension. So I think the police, the Merseyside police, actually did the right thing, and they should be given credit. They tried to be open and honest and to disclose that information at the earliest opportunity. I said at the time, when that happened, that there will be some challenges in the future, because people will demand that on every single occasion. And the police have to balance it. And ultimately, the police are witnesses. The decision to charge or not is made by the CPS. Ultimately, the CPS make that decision. Mm. And the danger is, if the police disclose too much information and the defence are able, if the matter goes to court, says, well, my client's not going to get a fair trial, you may actually defeat the whole point of justice and have a situation where information has been released. It may involve identifying the individual who's going to go on some ID parade. All those kind of things will be taken into account. And the barristers might turn around and say, well, there's no way my client can have a fair trial, and the whole matter can be thrown out. So it's a very, very difficult balance between ensuring that you share information, which I support, which is appropriate, but also be aware of the potential pitfalls if the matter goes before court.
Is it relevant information, though? What skin colour somebody has, or what their ethnicity is? Is that relevant? Do we need to know that? Is it pertinent?
I don't think we need to know, but I think what happens is, because there's such a clamour of misinformation, and the Liverpool parade was a classic example. The perpetrator was a white man, but the misinformation that was being spread was that he was an Asian person. And those images, false images of an entirely innocent person who had nothing to do with the incident being circulated. So I think we are where we are, and it is a difficult situation. Ideally, you would release minimum information and you'd wait for the matter to go to court. And then you wouldn't have any potential allegations of people saying, well, I'm not going to get a fair trial.
Yeah.
But we are, you know, in some ways, we have to basically look at how the internet has gone far beyond the abilities of individual countries to control the information that's out there.
Yeah, it's the alleged perpetrator in Liverpool. He hasn't yet stood trial, just to make that clear. There are people, and I have some sympathy dealt with this, to be honest, who would just say, well, this is just pandering to racism. This is just giving people the facts that they want so they can get angry when crimes are committed by people who aren't white Brits, the very same crimes that they couldn't care less about when those crimes are committed by white Brits. Is this just giving racists ammunition?
You're right, Ben, and absolutely, thank you for correcting me. It's the alleged perpetrator. That's but okay. I think the reality is that there will be people who whip up sort of attitudes, bigotry, in order to justify their position. So I'm unfortunately, the genie's out of the bottle now. We don't control the media in this country. It's controlled by a handful of billionaires in California. And so information goes on X. Governments don't control that. And basically, before we know it, information that we could control. So for example, if LBC shared information, which would potentially lead to a trial collapsing, you'd be hauled over the coals and fined huge amounts of money and taken off the air.
Yeah,
That doesn't happen to social media companies.
It doesn't. But, you know, these protests we've seen in recent days in Epping and other places, after two stories about two alleged crimes, one sexual assault, one rape, both allegedly committed by asylum seekers of young teenage girls, one in fact pre-teenage girls. They've prompted protests, they prompted outrage, they prompted anger. if that is multiplied by God knows how many times, Dale, and every single time someone who is an asylum seeker or is not British is accused of a crime, we're going to see an awful lot of protests, an awful lot of tension. It's going to make the situation worse, I fear.
And I think that's a challenge. That's a challenge because what we know a lot. I'm British. You know, I was born here. My children are British. My brothers and sisters are British. You know, so we need to be very, very careful if we end up having a system, a two-tier system, where if you're white, your identity will not be an issue for the far right. But if you happen to be a person of colour, and we have to remember, you know, when we look at people may be white and not be British. You know, so you know you could be from another country and still not be a British citizen. But the interest appears to be more around people's skin colour.
Yeah. I just want to ask you lastly, Dale, I hope you don't mind, about the incident in Manchester, because that was one of the incidents that caused quite a lot of concern. This is the incident following which a man last week was found guilty of assault against two female police officers. After that footage came out, you claimed that the police behaviour was totally appalling and was likely driven by racism. A significant part was played by racism, you said. Given that man how has been found guilty of two assaults against female police officers, do you stand by those comments?
Well, there are two incidents, isn't there? There's the incident, and you've actually not given the full picture, Ben, unfortunately.
Go on.
The incident I was referring to was where the police officer had kicked a man lying unconscious in the head. And that was the incident I was referring to, where there was no reason whatsoever to kick a person who was largely unconscious lying on the floor. That was the incident I was referring to.
So you still maintain that there was excessive
force?
Yeah.
I think it'd be helpful if you'd given the full facts, Ben, instead of trying to make out a situation which isn't accurate.
No, I'm not at all, Dale. I'm just asking whether, given you know what we now know about the wider situation, whether you
We knew that at the time, didn't we, Ben? We knew there was two incidents, didn't we? There was one incident where a person was lying on the ground and was kicked in the head.
Yeah.
I said at the time that was totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
And I talked about the fact that they're all white team and they attacked him. And then, quite rightly, the person's been convicted of an offence. And that's absolutely right. It's excessive evidence. But I didn't talk about that incident.
OK, understood. Dale, appreciate your time. Thank you very much for coming on. Dale Babu, former chief superintendent in the Metropolitan Police. Your call's coming in on whether it is a good idea or not for the police to disclose the ethnicity of people who are accused of crimes or charged with crimes, or whether, like Dale, you think maybe this is something that's going to have to happen, but you've got concerns about where that might lead us. 0345 606 0973 is the time, is the number indeed. 1017 is the time. Your calls after this.
This is LBC.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence. That's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
Mr. Thing is enjoying a lovely summer's day. He's trimmed the hedge, he's cut the grass, and best of all, he's just had 25% snipped off his home care cover, meaning his boiler, electrics, plumbing and drains are now covered for less. Chop, chop, sign up today. This offer ends soon. Search British Gas Home Care Cover. Watch out for that rake, Mr. Thing. Ouch! Too late. British Gas. Taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Offer not available to existing home care or boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September 2025.
The ASA regulates UK ads across all media, including radio, to make sure they stick to the rules. You should be able to trust the ads you hear, whether you love them or hate them. So we're by your side and keeping our ears open, because every little helps. The ASA. Keeping ads legal, decent, honest and truthful. Oh, yes.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 606 0973.
1019, if you are one of the people who thinks, absolutely, I want to know the ethnicity of every person who's charged with a criminal offence, why? Why? What does that... Why is that relevant? Why is that pertinent? What do you think knowing that will change or achieve? Because I've got to be honest with you, if someone is accused of committing rape against a 12-year-old girl, I am just as appalled if they are a white British person who's lived there all their life and has traced their ancestry back 80,000 years to this country than I am if they came here last week claiming asylum. It doesn't appall me more if somebody commits that crime or is accused of committing that crime if they are one ethnicity compared to another, or they came here from abroad versus they've always lived here. It doesn't really change my thinking about them or the victim or what they are accused of doing. If you disagree with that, if you do feel more strongly if it is a particular ethnicity involved, genuinely like to hear your thoughts on why you think that is so pertinent. 0345 606 0973. Let's talk to James in Liverpool about this. This suggestion, James, that we should, or the police should be releasing the ethnicity of people charged with criminal offences. Is that a good idea, do you think? Evening.
Hi, Ben.
Hi.
I believe in the circumstances, then it should be released. And the reasoning behind that is, as I worked on the Liverpool parade and one of the first responders.
Did you, James? Right.
Yeah. And when that information was passed over our airways, that was a relief for the people I was working with as well, because we was worried about unrest happening while we was trying to work.
Because the fear would be if it hadn't been a white man that was accused, there would have been far more of a backlash and far more potential for violence.
Yeah. Which would then put us in more danger than we were currently in, because the information was sketchy at best at first. So when you're working in those conditions, which we know, that's what we're signing up for.
Yeah.
But it was, to a point, a bit of a relief.
Because the last thing you want to be dealing with, in addition to the horrors that you were dealing with, is a load of fake news spiralling out of control like it did after the Southport attack.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear you completely. And I get why they did it in that situation. The sort of, as Dow was saying though, James, and they open a kind of a whole can of worms in a way, don't they? Because next time it happens, if they don't release the ethnicity, everyone will assume that it's not a white Brit.
Yeah, and no one would want anyone to be falsely accused, like the false information that was originally released in Liverpool. So once that was cleared up with the correct information released by Liverpool police, then that put a lot of the fake news to rest.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But just what you're saying, James, it does make me think, coming back to this point about racism, the reason that Merseyside police, understandably, and I think rightly in that situation, like you, felt the need to put that information out there, was basically to appease racists who were getting ready to kick off and start rioting if that person hadn't been white.
Yes.
Yeah. So it is to a degree, this call, what we are basically saying is the police need to do more to quell tensions by reassuring the racist minority in our country.
Yeah. Mm. So releasing the ethnicity is good in certain circumstances.
But don't they have to do it across the board? If they say sometimes they give the ethnicity and other times they don't, won't that lead to even more people, understandably, saying, what are you hiding?
It could be, thinking about it like that, yeah.
Mm. That's the risk, I think. How do you sort of feel, how do you reflect on it now, James? It must have been quite a thing to live with, being one of the first responders at that time for that incident.
It is, because the day was exceptional. Good-willed, many families having a very good day. Lots of children singing, chanting. They were playing football in the streets when the streets were closed. And unfortunately, it was destroyed by that. It'll just be remembered for what happened.
It must have stayed with you as well, what you had to witness.
It does. Yeah. They all do.
I'm sure they all do. That's a slightly silly thing for me to say, in a way, because I'm sure they all do. You must have seen some awful, awful things. Thank you, James. Appreciate the call this evening. James in Liverpool. To Birmingham and Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Ben. Yes, I was very impressed that you used the word dubious about your feelings about whether it was appropriate to disclose the ethnicity of alleged perpetrators.
I am dubious, Kevin, to be honest with you.
I'm extremely dubious. And actually, hopefully, your listeners at the moment will remember the 10 o'clock news item about the white, middle-aged man who was arrested at, I think, Luton Airport after having been accused of committing a serious violent...
Tommy Robinson, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And it is ironic. So I've got slightly mixed feelings about it, because in one way, I think if the statistics were, rather than identifying people's ethnicity every time a crime is committed, then if there are regular reports from, say, the Office for National Statistics, I think we would find, actually, that those statistics tell a different story. But unfortunately, the extremists are not really interested in facts and figures. They're interested in distorting the yes. truth of what's going on. And sadly, most crimes, especially violent and sexual crimes, are committed under our own roofs by the people who are nearest and dearest to us, regardless of ethnicity.
Yep. Yes. And that is what, to be honest with you, Ken, that really gets my back up, because if you only get angry and you only spout off on social media or go out and protest or whatever it is that you do to display your anger, if you only feel anger against violence against women and girls when it's carried out by somebody who is not white, I don't think it's unreasonable for all of us to infer that your primary motivation, your primary concern in that situation isn't really violence against women and girls. You are using that as a vehicle to get angry about migration, immigration, people of colour, call it what you want.
Because I'm therefore trying to distort the, influence the opinions of mainstream people who would otherwise be more moderate. So it's trying to influence people, whether it's especially online, and that's really disgraceful. But just one, if I could just slip in one final point, which is that I'm very happy that I live in a society which continues to be very moderate and liberal and generous to people from other countries who
Do you still think that's what we are?
I do think that. Yeah, there is. I do think there's a little bit of a wave of right wing activity at the moment. But this happens every other decade, and it's always a minority, and we always get through it, and we always continue to be a liberal, moderate country that welcomes other people. I believe that will always continue.
That's a nice positive note, uplifting note to finish on. Thank you, sir. I really hope you're right. Kevin in Birmingham. Paul's on the line in Southampton. How are you, Paul?
Fine, thanks. How are
you? Good. I'm very well, Paul. Thoughts on this? Good idea or recipe for disaster?
What I want to say is that I had to call the police myself 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And one of the first questions they asked me is, what is my ethnicity?
What is your ethnicity?
Exactly. And what is the... why do they need to know that? Yet they won't release... there was a very serious incident only a couple of days ago in Southampton where a knifeman stabbed three people outside Aldi's. Everybody knows the ethnicity of the man, but they won't release it. So it's a bit of hypocrisy here.
I guess, I honestly don't know. Maybe a police officer will let us know. I guess the reason they ask you your ethnicity, and I might well be wrong, Paul, it's just a guess, is...
DEI, that's what it is, isn't it?
No, I think it's so they can collate data on which groups of people are most likely to be the victims of crime. I guess. I would guess that's what it is, but I might be wrong.
Well, I don't believe that is. I think there's a two-tier policing system in this country, and it has to be scrapped.
But what do you think? You being, I don't know what, presuming you're white British,
correct?
Yes. Do you think that means that what they would be less likely to investigate it or something?
I have no idea. Perhaps anyone from the police would phone.
I hope they will, because I think I'm probably right, and that's why they do it. But I don't know. So if you've got a police officer listening to this and you have an answer to Paul, why do you ask the ethnicity of victims of crime? 03456060973. So, Paul, do you think it makes sense, given that you're being asked for your ethnicity, for the ethnicity of the alleged perpetrators, like the knifeman you're talking about, to be made public?
Correct, I do. Why hide it? It's going to come out eventually anyway. So why hide it?
Because what would be gained by disclosing it?
Well, to alert the public of who is responsible.
But how does that change anything or anyone's behaviour?
It's not changing behaviour. If a crime happens, they usually ask you, the description of the person. You give them the description of the person, but they won't make it public.
Right, so if there's a crime, if someone stabbed on my street, as someone was recently, actually, and the police tell me that that person came from, I don't know, San Marino, what do I do with that information? What do we as a society do with that information?
Well, you've got a description of the person or a
no, but they've been charged. They're already in custody. The police have got who it is. Why do I need to know that they're Spanish or Polish or Canadian or whatever, or Afghan or I don't know, Turkish?
To alert the public.
But alert them to what? What does the public do differently?
We're all hiding behind this matter of, like, too frightened to mention what people's ethnicity are. Now, we all know the facts who carry knives in this country and who doesn't. I'm not saying white people don't, because they do. But
then,
you know,
we do.
Not every terrorist is, not every terrorist is Islamic, but a majority of terrorist offences are Islamic.
But what do we do with that information? Do we then avoid Muslim people on the tube? Do we steer clear of certain communities that we think are carrying knives? What do we do with that, Paul? Because that's just stereotyping.
Information is knowledge, and you can avoid certain situations and scenarios.
What you mean is avoid certain people, isn't it?
Well,
that's what you mean.
To do that, if you're going to go to an area where you know there's a high possibility that you could be, I don't know, like walking down the street with a piece of jewellery and you get knifed or something, you'd avoid it, wouldn't you not?
Right, so if you're on the tube and you know that statistically most bombings on the tube have been carried out by Muslims...
I don't go on the tube.
All right, but if you're on a train then, or somewhere else where there might be a terror attack, and you see a Muslim person, what you think, well, actually, statistically now, that's racist,
it's racial stereotyping, it's racial profiling. It's called being aware and conscious of your surroundings.
It's not really, is it? Because the chances of, in your situation, that Muslim person being a terrorist are absolutely minuscule. So if you treat them as if they are, that is racial profiling. And what about all the crimes committed by white people? What if people say, what if there was a spate of burglaries carried out by white Brits in Southampton, Paul, and people started avoiding you because they said, oh, well, actually, you're a white British person, Paul, so around here you might be a burgler? You wouldn't like that very much, would you?
Everyone has a choice in a
But you wouldn't like that, would you? So why do you think other people deserve to be treated in the same way?
I don't think I'd notice it, to be honest with you.
Well, if somebody actively said to you, I'm avoiding white British people in Southampton because I fear they might all be robbers.
But if they said it to
you'd
you,
have no
you'd
issue
know
with
that,
it.
So you'd be aware of it.
So, right, okay, so if you found out people were avoiding you because you were a white man, you'd have no issue with it.
Everyone has a choice.
But you would, Paul, and that's, we all would, because it's racial, ethnic profiling, and if the police give people the ammunition to do more of that, then I'm worried that that is not a good thing. Thank you, Paul. More of your calls to come on this in just a moment. And breaking news about the small boat crossings in the last few minutes. A new treaty between the UK and France will come into force very, very soon indeed. Give the details after the news headlines. Here's James Kitchen.
Winds of more than 120 miles an hour have been recorded in the Scottish Highlands as Storm Floris batters the central belt and northern areas. More than 32,000 homes have been left without power. The Prime Minister has promised to restore order to British borders as a new migrant returns deal with France comes into force. The so-called one-in-one-out agreement will see some small boat arrivals sent back to France under a pilot scheme. And officers investigating reports of an alleged assault at St Pancras Station a week ago have tonight arrested a 42-year-old man at Luton Airport. It comes after a video emerged online appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson next to a man lying motionless on the ground. LBC weather, heavy rain and winds for the far north and northeast Scotland tonight. Showers for the rest of Scotland, Northern Ireland and Northern England. A low of 8 degrees.
LBC, Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. The one-in-one-out deal to return Channel migrants to France comes into force. Nick will speak with the Home Secretary Yvette Cooper. Meanwhile, Nigel Farage tells the police to release the ethnicity of suspected sex offenders, and a search is underway for a missing Brit who vanished from her sunbed on a Greek beach while her husband was asleep. All that and more coming up with Nick Ferrari at breakfast tomorrow morning from 7 o'clock here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your radio and on Global Player. LBC.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been. When you discover hidden gems and amazing sights. When you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. Bored off to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and Cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one-third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 10:35. More details in just a moment about the new treaty between the UK and France designed to put a stop, or at least reduce, the channel crossings, the small boat channel crossings, coming into effect tomorrow. But is it actually going to achieve anything? And what is it going to change? That to come in a couple of minutes' time. First, John's in Chiswick to talk more about this row that's broken out, John, about whether or not the police should, as Nigel Farage wants them to, tell us all what ethnicity this country's criminals are. What do you reckon, sir?
Yeah, so I was just calling in relation to the last caller asking a question as to why the police ask for ethnicity.
Oh, yeah, fantastic, John.
On the phone call.
He was saying, why do they ask when you call to report a crime, why do they ask what your ethnicity is?
Yeah, so essentially the Home Office will collate all the data regarding crime victims. So, for instance, your age, your sex, your date of birth, your address, and your ethnicity. So, obviously inform us on who is victim of a particular crime at a particular time, and that enables the police to essentially respond to that in a more data-driven manner. So it's not two-tier policing, it's completely relevant along those lines, and that has absolutely no impact.
Oh, John, I was right for a change. I thought that was what it would be. And you are a serving police officer, so you are doing this day in, day out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been police officer about 11 years now. And in regards to the question about whether we should be releasing ethnicities in relation to what offences they've committed, it's completely immaterial and irrelevant. I've worked across the country in two major metropolitan forces, and you get criminals of all ethnicities, sex and age committing all sorts of crimes. So it would be utterly pointless as an exercise to collate those data.
What consequences might it have, John, do you think, if that data was... if we did start to release that data and that information?
Well, it would lend into the argument that many on both sides of the divide will say that certain individuals from a certain background are more likely to commit a certain type of offence. And one thing as the police we cannot do is we cannot paint an entire group with the same brush. It's something that we're consistently accused of doing on a regular basis. If we started releasing the ethnicities of people related to particular crime, data can be easily used to make a very, very simple and basic argument. And you would end up having people making that argument for political reasons, and we would see no general benefit behind it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, John, please, but that data is already collated, isn't it? The Home Office already knows, it already has the statistics on the ethnicity of people that have been charged with certain crimes. So if there is an issue in a certain community, they know. I guess it's just a question of how much of that is made public.
Yes, entirely, yeah. So whenever we report crime, we report all the characteristics of the individual. So, yeah, those lists do exist, as you will. But I just see absolutely no reason as to why a robbery suspect being Indian, a rape suspect being white, or a terrorist suspect being black has any influence on the way we should police or the way we should conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis.
John, great call. So glad you called in. Thank you, sir. I mean, again, what are we? 40 minutes into this conversation, we still haven't got to the bottom of what this would achieve, if anything. If you are somebody who absolutely passionately believes that we have the right to know the ethnicity of somebody when they are charged in individual cases, not just collectively in the way that John and I were talking about, every single time somebody is charged, we should be told what country they've come from, what their ethnic heritage is. Why? What good will that do? Because I can see what damage that might do, what harm that might do in terms of stirring up tensions and division and potentially even violence. What's the counter argument? What's the benefit of us all knowing that actually that bloke who was charged with rape or robbery or murder or sex abuse, whatever it might be in our area, was Afghan, Eritrean, Polish, Somalian, Turkish, Australian, English, Irish, Scot? What do we do with that information? What does it change? How do we deal with it? What do we respond to it with? I don't see a clear benefit. So I don't really get the clamour. Maybe you do. Maybe you think I'm missing something. 0345 6060 973. More of your calls to come on that in just a couple of minutes' time. 10:40 the time. First, though, breaking news tonight from the government. In the last 10 minutes, they have announced that the treaty they signed with France a couple of weeks ago now, a one-in-one-out policy on asylum seekers, will come into force tomorrow. But what is it? And will it actually achieve anything? Zoe Gardner joins us to talk about all of that, independent migration expert. Zoe, very good evening to you. Just tell us a little bit more, if you wouldn't mind, first of all, about what this treaty is and what you make of it. Evening.
Evening, Ben. Okay, so the treaty essentially is a cooperation agreement with the French. It's in a pilot phase that they're opening up tomorrow. And what they're going to do is that they're going to return one person who has crossed the channel in a small boat to France in exchange for bringing one person who has not crossed the channel in a small boat, but who presumably otherwise would have, to the UK through a safe and legal route. So it's been billed as one in, one out. And I think there's two things to say about it. The first is that it gets one very basic thing right, which is to acknowledge that there's no feasible way of cooperating with France in order to prevent small boats crossings without recognizing that we need to play our role and take our fair share of people from France too, right? Because the French just simply aren't going to agree to a deal where it's like, no, you just deal with everything and we deal with nothing. Mm. So that part of it is good. On the other hand, the one in, one out part just doesn't work, because if your safe route to come to the UK is dependent on somebody else risking their life in the channel and then being detained and returned again, then, well, essentially, as soon as it starts to work and people don't go in the channel, in theory, well, then there's no more places on the safe route. So as soon as sort of the alternative starts to be visible and people go, oh, we can take the alternative route, we don't have to risk our lives in the channel, then the alternative route dries up because nobody's risking their life in the channel. You see the problem?
Yes. I guess the government says, well, we've got an almighty backlog of tens of thousands of people. It's going to take quite a while for that to happen.
Yeah, well, so what you're saying is that in the meantime, people continue to cross the channel and nothing changes. I mean, I just don't think that this effectively addresses the problem. And I think that what this is very clearly is the government acting sort of in desperation. We have the government with historically low poll ratings for the Labour Party. They've never polled as low as they have this week. And obviously who's gaining from that is the Reform Party. But recent research has shown us what we already knew from other examples around the world, but specifically looking at what's happening in the dynamic between Labour and the Reform Party, is that when the Labour Party talk tough on immigration, people report that they are more likely to vote for Nigel Farage. So this is a doom spiral that this government is in. And it's the identical doom spiral, ironically, that the last government was in, because I think you might remember that week in, week out of the last government, all we heard about was how they wanted to stop the boats, and it only benefited Nigel Farage and it cost them the election. I think there are better things that the government could be spending its time doing, frankly. I mean, if you want to do things that are popular with the public, you know, we know from the polling that it's far more popular than stopping the boats or turning people away or anything would be exploring the nationalisation of our utilities and our water.
Sure, but they can't just give up.
If you want to do popular things, the government is totally out of popular things to do.
They can't give up on stopping the boats. Not just because of the cost and the fact that
will actually stop the boats.
Like what?
Well, you create a safe route, a safe alternative route, but you don't make it dependent on somebody risking their life in the channel.
But the safe and legal route, I take your point completely, but the safe and legal route is never going to be open to all the people who want to come here. Because the people who don't qualify
Who doesn't qualify? Why have we already decided people don't qualify?
Well, the alternative is, and I don't perhaps this is what you're proposing, that we have a safe and legal route that is potentially open to millions and millions and millions and millions of people.
You see, because that's the scare story we get, right? Please.
Go on.
This is how it's always presented. It's either hundreds of millions of people, the entire world, everybody comes here, or what we have now. And that's actually not the real choice.
No, it's not what I'm saying at all. It's not what I'm saying. It's not. I'm not saying hundreds of millions would come. I was saying
But you did just say hundreds of millions of people could come.
Could come.
A problem that we would...
Zoe, I said it would be open potentially to millions and millions and millions of people.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically, territorial asylum is theoretically open to hundreds of millions of people. The fact of the matter is 25,000 people have come this year. That is a drop in the ocean. You and I both know that, don't we? We know that that is a tiny proportion.
Absolutely.
Even of immigration,
I'm not disagreeing at all. All I'm saying is if you have a safe and legal route, which I do think we need, and it is open to basically everybody, unless it is open to everybody, there will still be people who feel they don't qualify, who have been rejected, who try to come here by other means, illegal means.
Well, then we need to look at what we're talking about when we say people qualify. Because, for example, with Ukraine, we said anybody qualifies. We said it was totally uncapped.
Yep.
That's 38 million people, right? Yep. It's not hundreds of millions of people. 38 million people who we said, you live in a very poor country that has been invaded by a bloodthirsty dictator. Any number of you, an uncapped number of you, can come here and we will provide you directly with housing in our communities, direct and immediate access to our labour market, direct and unimpeded access to our welfare state, right? 38 million people we offered that to. And how many came? 200,000 people came.
Yep.
And it was totally manageable. And 25,000 people crossing on boats. You're telling me that it's impossible that we could offer a safe route to that many people? Or even if that number increased, if it was a safe route that was managed similarly to the Ukraine scheme, what if it was higher than that, but nobody was crossing the boat on the boats in chaos? I think it's manageable. I think it's actually beneficial to us. We all know we need immigration. We can manage this differently, but we're just choosing to create a total mess. And this mess is actually now driving us towards a terrifying period of our politics. We are seeing, I think there are newspapers, there are commentators, there are politicians who won't be happy until we're seeing lynchings, until we're seeing riots, until we're seeing like really serious violence on our streets. That there is a racism that is being whipped up off the back of this that we need to take seriously, and we need to give people alternative ways of thinking about how we can manage migration, because they do exist.
Appreciate your time. Zoe, always interesting. Thank you very, very much indeed. Zoe Gardner, independent migration expert. If you've got thoughts on that, certainly a proposal, certainly solution. Is it the right one? 03456060973. But also on the point Zoe was just making there about the racism that is being whipped up by our conversation about migration. Is that racism also very much at play in the demand today from Nigel Farage, backed by Keir Starmer, for police to start disclosing the ethnicity of people accused of crimes? Is that just pandering to the very racism that Zoe was just talking about? 03456060973. More to come on that. And we'll see what tomorrow's newspaper front pages make of all the things that we're discussing tonight. Ben Kentish here. This is LBC 1047.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Growing crisis concerning illegal arrivals, asylum seekers, migrants to this country in the growing numbers, and of course the £6 million a day cost. This as the Home Secretary announces £100 million of extra funding to crack down on some of these issues. Labour MP and Minister of State for Border Security, Dame Angela Eagle.
If we fall out with the French and we don't cooperate with the French in policing the borders, then more people will come across. Well, the French.
How could it be any worse? Well, they're giving them money for nothing.
Nick, this is not true.
But what are they doing?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At SSE Energy Solutions, we know businesses are full of different kinds of energy.
Like your fourth coffee of the morning energy.
Your yes, chef energy. And even as per my last email energy. You can bring any energy you like to your business. But at SSE Energy Solutions, we bring simple, affordable energy. Choose SSE Energy Solutions. A different kind of energy.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish.
10.50 is the time. Talk to Mohammed in Ealing, Stephen in Epsom in just a moment. After 11, I'm going to return to a topic we've talked about often on and off on this show over the past year or so. It is the phenomenon of Bonnie Blue, who was shot to sort of national fame or infamy, maybe. Another row about her today. Advertisers leaving in their droves. The government talking about maybe banning some of what she does. Why does this woman anger people so much? Why is there so much revulsion and disgust around what she does? And is she a symptom of something that's wrong with our society that people don't like having a mirror held up to us in relation to? And if so, what is that thing? Talk about all of that and more after 11 o'clock. Let's have a quick look first at tomorrow's newspaper front pages. Where should we start? Let's start with The Guardian. Their lead story tomorrow, police warn of mass arrests at Palestine Action protest. The controversy over the ban on Palestine Action deepened yesterday as police warned of mass detentions if a demonstration that could attract 1,000 people goes ahead in support of that proscribed group this weekend. The Daily Mirror looks at the story that we are talking about this hour. Nigel Farage demanding that the police release and disclose the detail of the ethnicity of people accused of crimes. Fanning the flames is their pretty punchy headline. Nigel Farage has been accused of stoking hate in a repeat of the lead-up to the Southport riots. The Reform boss yesterday made claims of a cover-up over two men in a child rape case amid unverified allegations that they were asylum seekers. So Farage's argument is, well, they wouldn't be unverified if the police told us about them. We'd either know that one way or the other. Is that a good idea? Or is disclosing the ethnicity of suspects a recipe for disaster? Similar story on the front page of the Daily Express, which claims the British state, their headline, is failing to protect women and girls after officials admitted they don't know how many sex offences have been committed by asylum seekers. I come back to the same question that we still haven't got an answer to 52 minutes into this conversation together. What do you do with that information that is in any way helpful? If you know, for example, that 4 rapes last year were committed by asylum seekers in this country, or 40, what do you do with that? What does that change in terms of policy or police response or policy on asylum? 0345 6060973, if you can provide an answer to that, perhaps. The story we just discussed with Zoe, Home Office to detain small boat migrants for deportation to France within days. The Telegraph, different story. Parents pay £500 million to beat school VAT raid. Labour's tax grab expected to fall short as wealthy families hand over fees in advance. And last but not least, the Times returning to this very topic. Police and Prime Minister at odds over migrant suspects. Keir Starmer puts pressure on police chiefs to release more information about offenders.
the police criticised for failing to do so in relation to an alleged rape of a 12-year-old girl in Nuneaton last month. Let's come back to your calls on that and talk to Mohammed in Ealing this evening. Evening, Mohammed.
Good evening, Ben. How are you doing? I hope you're doing all pleasantly
well. I'm very well, Mohammed. Thank you. Hope you are too, sir.
Yeah, absolutely great in this windy London afternoon. Evening, shall
I say. It's a storm, isn't it? Storm, what's it called? Floris or something bizarre.
Floris, yeah, very windy.
Anyway, talking of storms, talk about this political one about ethnic minorities' disclosure of their ethnicity if they commit crimes.
I think, Ben, it comes down to the, if we disclose the ethnicity of whoever committed a criminal offence, those data are available to the police and the Home Office and other authorities, but I don't think it will make any difference. The reason Nigel Farage and his party, the Reform Party, and people to the right are demanding this is because of the failure of immigration policy over 20 years. And that's failures of government, both Conservative and Labour governments have failed on immigration policy. And at the moment, there is a rise in anti-immigration, you know. And I spoke on previous shows, and I'm not sure if I spoke on your show about this as well, is that if we are blaming a small portion of people who are coming through on boats, yep, it is wrong for them to, you know, illegally come across the channel. However, there is a bigger problem in terms of immigration. Legal migration faces bigger challenges rather than these individuals coming across the channel. And if all of this has come after Brexit. Prior to Brexit, we had immigration levels were rising, but after Brexit, they've completely and utterly gone out of control because certain processes, procedures, now you've got to take into account EU migration.
Well, it's certainly gone up. It's gone through the roof. Brexit, we're told, will take back control of our borders, and we have, and we've used that control over our borders to let in far more people. That's the reality of it. Mohammed, thank you very much. Need lots of calls coming in to Stephen in Epsom this evening. Stephen!
Hello, Ben. Evening. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thoughts, sir?
Good. I personally don't see the problem knowing a person's ethnicity in anything. I can't see the problem. It seems to be everybody wants a bit of a cover up here, because what difference does it make? If it doesn't make any difference, why shouldn't you know?
Because there is the potential, as I touched on, Stephen, I think, for it to do damage by whipping up hatred by lots of people who are acting in bad faith, who have dodgy motives, to seize on this information and say things like, well, one asylum seeker is committed a crime, we should deport them all, we're going to protest outside their hotels, we're going to, you know, try and burn them down like happened after the Southport riots. There is the potential for this information to foment an awful lot of social disorder and even violence in this country, isn't that?
It's a bit like a puzzle, isn't it?
But do you think I'm wrong to say that?
If you're missing a piece of the puzzle, you won't see the whole picture.
But what is the picture?
Before all this immigration, people would read the papers and they would still want to know who the person was. Back in the 60s, when the Krays were doing what they were doing, there were two MPs, white MPs, who were involved in certain things, and they wanted to know who those MPs were. So it's no different from now.
The ethnicity wasn't as important then, Stephen, was it? People weren't demanding to know what county people came from or what their heritage was. They just weren't in the same way.
That's what it's caused.
What has caused?
All this whipping up of hatred. And I think the thing is, nobody is bothered about where anybody comes from.
Yeah, they are.
Sorry?
Why are they demanding to know their ethnicity if they're not bothered about where they come from?
Well, what difference does it make? I do not understand.
What good does it do?
If I do a crime and somebody says I'm a white Englishman, so I'm a white Englishman. Yeah,
that's my point. So why do we? What's the point of publishing the statistics?
Yeah, but as that other chap said, when you phone up, if you phone up the police with a problem, they'll say, "What's your ethnic?"
They don't publish that, Stephen. That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, but why do they? It's not right. They even ask it if it's all wrong.
He explained why they do it. He explained where the police officer phoned in to explain why they're doing it. They're doing it so they can build a picture of which groups in which areas are being affected by which sorts of crime.
But why do they need to do that?
So they know where to target their resources.
No, it's rubbish. Why do they need to do that if there's not a problem in the first place?
You don't think it's relevant that to take... Hold on. You don't think it's relevant to take the grooming gangs in somewhere like Rochdale. You don't think it's relevant that the victims were mainly white girls. It's completely irrelevant.
Well, I think it gives the whole picture.
How would we know the victims?
Just say a man caused a problem.
Yeah.
Well, who is that man? Well, that whole picture, it's a puzzle. You put the last piece in and everybody can see the whole puzzle and see exactly what it looks like.
So you don't think the ethnicity of the victims in somewhere like Rochdale was in any way relevant, Stephen, to that awful case that happened there?
Well, of course it was.
Well, how would we know the ethnicity if the police hadn't asked them?
It's like you
said. We'd never know that they were white girls because if you had your way, the police wouldn't have asked them.
It's a bit like you said to that other caller. If somebody was causing problems in a particular area and they found out there were lots of white people causing the problems, well, if you looked out of your window and they were breaking in here, there and everywhere, you might be a bit concerned seeing a white person walking down the road and thinking, I wonder if they're up to any good. So you need to know. That's why you need to know.
That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen with white people. It only happens with people who aren't white. That's my worry about it. And Stephen, I'm not saying for a minute the police shouldn't collate this data, because actually I think you're right to say it's important. We do know if there are certain issues with crime in certain communities. That's vital for the police to know and the Home Office to know. And I don't mind that being disclosed. But in every single case, every single time somebody is charged, we should know whether they're white or non-white or British or not British. We're still an hour in, we haven't got to the answer of what good that does, if any. And I think it could do an awful lot of harm. Stephen, I've got to leave it there. Thank you very much for calling in this evening. We move on the other side of the news o'clock. I want to talk to you about this almighty row that's broken out about Bonnie Blue. If you haven't heard of her, well, you probably have by now, unless you've been under a rock for the last few weeks. She's the woman who had sex with 1,000 men in one day. It's caused an almighty storm. Lots of people seem to despise her. Lots of people disgusted by her. What is it that has fostered so much feeling and emotion towards her? And what is she actually doing that is so wrong, if you think there is something wrong about it? Call me now, 0345 6060 973. Lots on that to come after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Keir Starmer's one-in, one-out deal to return Channel migrants to France comes into force tomorrow. The agreement, which has now been approved by the European Commission, means the UK will be able to send people crossing the Channel in small boats back to France. That's in exchange for taking in asylum seekers with ties to Britain. The Border Security Minister, Dame Angela Eagle, insists the arrangement will make a difference.
It's the first time we've had a return scheme with any country in Europe since we came out of the European Union. It's a pilot scheme to see what works, and we're looking forward to it starting very soon.
Meanwhile, the Conservatives warn the public's patience with illegal migration has snapped. We're being warned to expect travel disruption to continue into the morning as Storm Floris brought winds of up to 122 miles an hour to Scotland. Earlier, 32,000 homes were left without power while the storm brought down trees onto roads and railways. Downing Street says images showing Israeli hostages starving are completely abhorrent. Hamas has offered to work with the Red Cross to bring them more supplies, but only if a permanent aid corridor is opened up in Gaza. Health officials in the Strip say 5 Palestinians died of starvation yesterday. Police have released pictures of more than 50 people they still want to trace following the violence following the Southport stabbings last summer. Officers have already made more than 1,800 arrests. Ian Byrne is the West Derby MP and says it's concerning to see other more recent protests flaring up.
something which you're not happy about. You can rightly, in the right way, make your voice heard loud and clear. The violence, obviously, what we've seen last week and what we've seen in our streets 12 months ago, I just really, really hope that's not replicated and we find a better way to face the challenges which the country undoubtedly faces.
And police say a 42-year-old man from Bedfordshire has been arrested at Luton Airport as he arrived from Portugal. It's after a video emerged which appeared to show the far-right activist Tommy Robinson walking away from the scene of an alleged assault at St Pancras Station. Officers say the man's been arrested on suspicion of grievous bodily harm. He'd been wanted for questioning after leaving the UK for Tenerife following the incident last month. LBC weather, heavy rain and winds for the far north and northeast Scotland tonight. Showers for the rest of Scotland, Northern Ireland and Northern England, a low of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm James Kitchen.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It is 11.04. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Very, very good evening if you're just joining me here on the programme. I want to return to a topic that we've touched on a couple of times now, you and I together, over the last year or so. Something we were talking about, dare I say, long before many people were, because I think it's a fascinating phenomenon. And the phenomenon is one woman. One woman who goes by the name of Bonnie Blue. Not her real name. Her real name is Tia Billinger. Did you know that? But she has shot to fame slash infamy because of a series of sexual stunts regarding her work as an OnlyFans model and porn actress, the latest of which saw her claim to have had sex with 1,000 men in a single day. You might remember she was the subject of a Channel 4 documentary last week, which thrust her even more firmly into the public limelight. And this week, the backlash continues. News today that advertisers are pulling their funding, pulling their support for that Channel 4 documentary. And at the very same time, the government is announcing that some elements of what Bonnie Blue does, namely the videos and the content that includes her boasting about having sex with people she describes as barely legal, quote unquote, could be banned. They're looking at making that illegal, that sort of extreme pornographic content. Everyone I speak to, everyone I know has a view on this. And the overwhelming majority of views about Bonnie Blue are incredibly negative. It's no exaggeration to use words like disgust, shock, horror, revulsion. People are appalled by her. People are sickened by her. Somebody's texting now saying, this turns my stomach. And they are not alone. This is the general reaction that I have sensed to this woman and what she does. There's a fascinating article by a journalist in the Times today, who always writes fascinating articles. His name's James Marriott, about why we find this so disturbing, about why Bonnie Blue stirs up and fosters so many strong, sort of unfiltered, visceral, really, emotions in so many of us. And why, and I absolutely include myself in this as well, quite a lot of us who feel those things, who just sense there is something really quite wrong and grotesque about this, really struggle to articulate what it is about that, what it is that she is doing that we find so disturbing. He writes this, amid the acres of outraged commentary, I have struggled to find anyone able to articulate precisely why exactly this feels so immoral. But it does for most of us, doesn't it? There is something about Bonnie Blue, who she is, what she does and how she does it, that we find really disturbing. And I, like James Marriott, have noticed that many of us struggle to say exactly what that is. So let's try, between now and 12, and we'll talk about something very, very different indeed, let's try and get to the bottom of that together, shall we? That question, what is it, as James Marriott puts it, what is it about her that we find so immoral, so disturbing, so disgusting? That's the first question for you. If you've got a view on that, why she fosters such strong negative emotions in so many people. 03456060973, the number to call. Second question, which is a bit more complicated, but I'm interested in your thoughts on as well. I've got a theory, might be wide of the mark, might be wrong, that part of the reason that we feel so strongly about Bonnie Blue is that she holds up a mirror to us collectively, that she shines a light on something about the world that we live in now, something about this society, this country specifically, that we really don't like. That she is a symptom or a symbol of something that has gone really quite badly wrong in the modern world. I wonder if you agree with that. And if you do, what is that thing? What is Bonnie Blue a sign of? What is she a symptom of? What does she tell us about the world that we are living in right now, the Britain that we are living in right now? 03456060973. Is it about the hypersexualization of society, the fact that sex is everywhere, the fact that deviant, quite extreme practices and stunts like this are now quite mainstream, that we're talking about them again on national radio, that Channel 4 have done a documentary on her, that stuff that would have been seen as very much on the fringes of society, the extremes of society, is now everywhere? Is it more simple than that? Is it just about greed and capitalism? And a woman making an awful lot of money, and she does make an awful lot of money, by doing things that are extreme and attention-grabbing? Or is it just that? Is it just the fact that people see her as nothing more than a superficial attention seeker? I don't know. You tell me. 03456060973, the number to call. You can WhatsApp the same number. You can text me, as always on this programme, or any time on LBC, on 84850. Let's talk to Praveena Rudra about all this. Praveena is Assistant Opinion Editor at the iNewspaper, who's written a really interesting piece headlined, Bonnie Blue is the Endpoint of Capitalism, Not Feminism, which we will come on to. Praveena, great to have you with us this evening. Just talk to me first, if you wouldn't mind, about Bonnie Blue. What do you make of her? And what do you make of what she does?
It's pretty bizarre watching, because it's very hard to think of anyone else in the public sphere who displays that emotional detachment or even kind of relish when it comes to these extreme sexual acts. So I think a lot of us were just really watching that documentary, trying to figure her out and what's behind that Bonnie Blue stare. And to my mind, it's a desire for money. but I think the answer probably has a bit more nuance to it.
Well, let's talk about that. Do you have any kind of objection, a moral objection to what she does? Or is she just a sort of a business that we should just come to kind of accept and say, look, fair play to her, it's quite extreme, but she does well for herself?
Yeah, I do have an objection for a few reasons. I think the first thing is that it would be one thing if she was going out there and doing her thing and then sort of sitting quietly and just going about normal everyday life. But she's gone on a podcast with Andrew Tate and therefore allied with someone who is very clearly against women and misogynist. But then she also is quite agnostic, I think, to a lot of the problems which her content throws up. So when she's pushed on the plight of young girls who might see her content online and think that it represents a normal way to have sex with men, she just kind of says it's up to parents to educate their kids and doesn't really have an answer. So I think for reasons like that, I am just strongly against what she does.
There's a sort of recklessness and irresponsibility. And if what you're saying is right about money, it's basically, as long as she's raking it in financially, she's almost immune to the consequences of what she's doing.
Yeah, I think she certainly sees it that way. I think she views it in a very purely profit-based capital sense. So she talks about earning 1.5 million a month, but she wants 5 million a month. And she, I would say, has a lot of marketing slogans. In her documentary, she repeats these phrases like thousand man gangbang, rearrange my insides, to the point they almost start to feel mundane, which is quite some feat. So I feel like everything that she does is kind of performance art in service of that.
And your piece, tell us more about your piece, Bruno. It's really interesting. Bonnie Blue is the endpoint of capitalism, not feminism. It's an interesting take, because there's been a lot of debate about feminism. Is she a feminist? Is what she does the embodiment of a female empowerment and so on? But for you, this is more about capitalism, is it?
I think it's mostly about her being focused not on her own pleasure, but on getting as much money as she can. I think you could see it as about feminism if you saw a sense that she, say, tries to orgasm through her work, but she makes it clear that that's not really a priority for her. The content's overwhelmingly based around her degradation. So, for example, like having a petting zoo event, which would see her tied up and treated like an animal. Having sex with so many porn stars in a day, she like almost looks like she's been beaten up afterwards. Like, I think all of that suggests that it's much more about for other people's gaze and therefore for the money that she can get from that than for anything to do with herself or women supporting women in general.
She's been very successful, in other words, I would say, at monetizing misogyny.
Yeah, I do think so. I think she really sort of thrives on pushing other women's buttons. So she will say stuff like, my favorite thing is seeing wedding rings on the men I sleep with, or I enjoy making content most with husbands and barely legals. So yeah, she knows exactly what she's tapping into.
She does, and she's been very successful with it, which I guess in a way is a skill. It's about branding, it's about marketing. And yeah, I wonder what you think, Praveena, but I feel for a lot of people, she symbolises, she exemplifies something that has gone wrong, badly wrong, in fact, with our society. And there's sort of different views on what that is. And obviously, you know, not pinning it on her, but she is a symbol of a kind of sick society, a hyper-sexualised society, a greedy one, whatever it is. Do you think that's fair? And if so, what do you think she tells us about our own society?
Yeah, I do think that's fair insofar as I think the extent of porn and its reach in our society means that more and more extreme content is favoured, because a website is obviously going to try and basically like push the most extreme content because people require higher and higher bar to get off, as it were. What we can do about that, I'm not sure, and I think it's probably a bit more complex than even having age controls on porn websites.
Yeah,
but yeah, I definitely think she's a symptom of this world where people just push the most extreme content possible.
And it normalises it. It shoves it firmly into the mainstream, doesn't it? The fact that we're even talking about it here, the fact that you're writing about it, the fact that she is, you know, getting more kind of debate around her, more attention than any other kind of adult porn star has in, certainly that I can remember. It's a sign of the kind of increasing, I guess, sexualisation of the society we live in no small part because of people like her.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because it's a lot of younger people, it's a lot of teenagers who would know about Bonnie Blue before there was this kind of recent media storm, and that really tells you something about I guess the normalization and the extent of the kind of content that she produces.
Yeah. Do you think it should be, I mean, there's talk today about some of the stuff she does being banned, the government intervening maybe to say, right, this kind of quote-unquote barely legal genre of pornography is potentially ripe for being outlawed, Praveena. Is it for the government to start taking a bit more of a look at some of this stuff?
I think so, because I don't really know how else that's going to change, right? Because porn websites have absolutely no incentive to change for, you know, what I don't think moral reasons are particularly driving websites like Pornhub. And so what reasons do they have to stop pushing videos to the top which have girls in school uniforms or say something about how young the girl is, but are very careful to also say that the girl is legal? Like, I think the government probably has to get involved.
Thank you, Praveena. Really interesting. Praveena Rudra is assistant opinion editor at The I newspaper, who wrote the column Bonnie Blue is the Endpoint of Capitalism, Not Feminism. Loads of your calls coming on this, which just goes to the point that there is something about this woman that makes us all feel quite a lot of things. But why? 0345 600 973 to your calls on that question just after this.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire your pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Safe trip begins with T.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CNC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-road adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge. Helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ben Kentish. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
20 past 11 is the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. Let's come to your calls about Bonnie Blue. What is it that she's doing that so many people seem to have such a big issue with? And am I right? Some, maybe not completely, but am I onto something with my little theory about this? That she exposes and shines a light on something about modern society or the country that we have now, Britain that we have now, that is disturbing to us in some way, and she is the embodiment and the epitome of it. And if I am right, and I haven't quite got to the next bit yet, what is that thing? What is the thing that Bonnie Blue exemplifies that we really, really don't like about not just her, but ourselves? Because if you had a psychologist here, they would say that actually a lot of things that make us feel the strongest or the angriest are things that we see in other people that we don't like in ourselves. And I do wonder if there is something about this Bonnie Blue that is a symptom of the world that all of us live in. Let's talk to John in Hackney about it all. John!
Hello there. It's Ben, isn't it?
It is, sir.
Oh, hello there. Thank you. I just think, fair play to Bonnie Blue. I think she is going to go down in history. She's going to have a legacy. She's going to be able to earn a lot of money. She has found a niche. She has found a niche. I think she is, like, at the top of the feminist peak, you know? She can decide what she wants to do with her body.
Do you think she's a feminist?
Well, I need to further think this. I can't say this or that about if she's a feminist, but right. I'm not sure.
But you don't have any issue with what she's doing, John?
I don't. I think she's found a niche. I think she's going to be rich forever. She's going to leave a legacy. She's going to be part of history. I think I think she's going to be all right from this, you know?
A positive legacy?
Well, it's like you said before, it's like holding up a mirror, a reflection, you know, on society. Where are we in society regarding this, this free porn, which was so easily available on the internet, you know, YouTube and, not YouTube, but the internet, you know.
But maybe that's it, John. Maybe that is what she represents. She represents a society where sexualization has gone too far, gone to an extreme, and where you're right, she makes millions off doing this. I wonder whether part of our kind of issue with her is that she's able to. That the current world, that the current society we have, is one in which people will pay an awful lot of money to watch this stuff in a way that maybe they wouldn't have done even 20, 30, 40 years ago. Thank you, John. Let's talk to Rob this evening in Deganwy in North Wales. Forgive my Welsh accent, Rob. Evening.
Hi, good evening. I'm actually in London. I'm in Liverpool Street.
I didn't even need to make a fool of myself pronouncing it.
Yeah,
I can manage London.
Go on, talk to me about Bonnie Blue.
So look, Bonnie Blue, yes, of course I know who she is. I hear what you're saying about there's a lot of online hate and disgust and so on about it, but I take a different view. I see it through a different lens. I'm a father. I'm a 52-year-old man. I've got a teenage daughter, and I look at my daughter and look at Bonnie Blue. She's not that much older, and I think I worry about Bonnie Blue. She doesn't disgust me. I don't despise her. I worry about her because where's she at mentally to want to do that kind of thing to herself?
But she says, Rob, I've got to give you kind of what she says, as Pravina was saying. She says that she actively enjoys it. She says, got to take her at her word, I think, that she wakes up every morning feeling so excited by her life.
That's true, but I've also seen
Rob, I think you've gone onto your Bluetooth or something. I'm trying to get back on a better line. I wanted to ask you, try and get Rob back, because I want to ask you why he would worry so much if his daughter went into that line of work. Because that's another way, I think, to get to an answer, isn't it, together, to the question of what is it that is so problematic, if there is something problematic about what she does, about what Bonnie Blue does. Quick word with Sarah and Bootle in the meantime. Sarah?
Good evening, Ben.
Evening.
Well, to be perfectly honest, everything that Bonnie Blue represents is all that's wrong with society. For a start, she goes on saying that she's this feminist. She's no feminist. She's a misogynist. And the thing is, she's also a misandrist. She dehumanises herself and the fellas that she's going with. And this is what it's come down to. We're seeing young teenagers now thinking that strangulation and all kinds of other extreme sex acts are great to do on girls. She is the epitome of Andrew Tate in a frock.
Whoa, that's a big claim, Sarah. Andrew Tate responsible for stirring up the hatred of millions of women, I think, in the minds of young men. What has Bonnie Blue done that is anywhere near as damaging as that?
Well, think about it this way. She's going with all these blokes, right? She's treating them as if they're a piece of meat.
They're active, willing participants. They queue for hours to take part in this stuff. So they're not the ones being exploited here.
They're not thinking about it, right? I used to work in the medical school in Liverpool, right? And the red light district was literally right at the back. Now, I've seen what goes on with sex work. I've seen the girls who are basically being treated like crap by the pimps. They're drugged up to the eyeballs. This is the end point of anyone in the sex game. I've seen these girls. That my heart.
It's not the end point of Bonnie Blue.
Oh, it mightn't be for her. But what if the girls?
So what's the issue with her?
What about the teenagers? What about the teenagers who see her and think I can earn this money? And the next thing they end up.
But what if they do, Sarah? What if they do decide to do exactly what Bonnie Blue does? What? And I'm not saying I think this because I don't. But what is the issue with girls wanting to be like her?
For one thing, it dehumanises them.
But that's up to them, isn't it?
It is, may be up to them, but take a look at you take a look, Ben, at society the way it is, right?
But if she
We're
is willing...
We're looking at the way
she's...
people are being treated. Every single time, I've seen girls being dehumanised. You go into a... been in town, right, in Liverpool. I've seen girls...
Got it, okay.
...being dehumanised, being spiked.
The way
you think that's right?
I've seen
it with blokes too.
The way that she allows herself to be dehumanised legitimises that sort of treatment towards other women. I hear you. Thank you for the call. Got Rob back better, I think, on a better line in London. Rob, I wanted to ask you about your daughter because I thought that was really interesting. You said that if your daughter sort of, you know, showed any inclination towards being like Bonnie Blue, you'd be pretty worried. Most dads would, I think. Most parents would. But why?
Sorry about the poor connection earlier. So, look, I think less about my daughter and more about Bonnie Blue. I just worry about the state of her mental health and her physical health after these exploits, I suppose, 1,000 minutes, 24 hours. You know, I saw the interview where I think it was her previous exploit, pre-1,000 in 24 hours, where she was crying. The look in her eyes just really made me pity her because she might be making loads of money. She might be famous for now, but I think for the fruits of the wrong reasons. Men are lauded as studs for sleeping with loads of women, whereas girls are treated as promiscuous. And I won't use words that I might normally.
I know the words that you might use, but isn't that evidence that actually quite a lot of the backlash against Bonnie Blue is sexism? Because if she was a bloke, she wouldn't have, she wouldn't be kind of triggering the kind of hatred and disgust that she seems to be.
Absolutely. It's total hypocrisy. And a lot of the men who are criticizing you and calling her these names, these are fathers and men who've looked at pornography and potentially benefited from it and used it themselves over many years. So the hypocrisy and sexism and misogyny around it is a real worry to me.
That's a really interesting point, Rob, because I think you're spot on that if this was a male OnlyFans creator who, you know, did a stunt where he slept with 1,000 women in a day, people might find it a bit weird or whatever. But I don't think people will be anywhere near as disturbed as they are by Bonnie Blue. So maybe this is just a vestige of this kind of sexist idea that women should be pure and chaste and all the rest of it. And she flouts that so openly that maybe even if we don't realise that's what's going on, that is why she that's why she troubles us so much.
I think so. But not only that, I think she opens up the modern world where women are treated as lumps of meat, quite honestly, to be exploited and abused and used.
Well, that's what Sarah was saying, that she is, even if she herself is doing well and is happy and is making lots of money, the way that the treatment of women that she promotes by allowing men to treat her and treat like an animal, sort of other stuff, that normalises really, really worrying, disturbing, dodgy treatment of other women. And that's the problem.
100%. You know, we've got a former Home Secretary who jokes about rohypnol and date rape drugs, for his own wife. And, you know, this treatment of women is just a lump of meat. They're virtually a sex toy to too many men. They're not a human being. They're not a woman. They're not empowered. Like I say, honestly, as a father, as a man, and a feminist, quite honestly, it really, really deeply troubles me. Women are perfectly equal to men, and that does not include being exploited and impregnated by 1,000 men in 24 hours.
Rob, great call. Appreciate the call. Thank you very, very much indeed. That was Rob calling, not from Degannwy in North Wales, where he's from, but from London, speaking a lot of sense. Is a lot of this, a lot of the backlash against Bonnie Blue, pure, unadulterated, even unconscious sexism and misogyny, because she is a successful woman who makes an awful lot of money out of her body and having sex. 03456060973 the time. More to come on that. And
the UK will recognise the state of Palestine in September unless the Israeli government takes substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza.
After that from Keir Starmer last week, today Downing Street says that it won't require Hamas to release the remaining hostages in order for the UK to recognise an independent state of Palestine. I think a disgraceful decision from our government. How on earth have they come to that conclusion? Details to come after news headlines at 11:31 with James Kitchen.
Sir Keir Starmer's one-in-one-out deal to return Channel migrants to France comes into effect tomorrow. The agreement means the UK will be able to send people crossing the Channel in small boats back to France in exchange for taking in asylum seekers with ties to Britain. We're being warned to expect travel disruption to continue into the morning as Storm Floris brought winds of up to 122 miles an hour to Scotland. Earlier, 32,000 homes were left without power while the storm brought down trees onto roads and railways. And police say a 42-year-old man from Bedfordshire has been arrested at Luton Airport as he arrived from Portugal. It's after a video emerged which appeared to show the far-right activist Tommy Robinson walking away from the scene of an alleged assault at St Pancras station last month. LBC weather, heavy rain and winds for the far north and northeast Scotland, showers for the rest of Scotland, Northern Ireland and Northern England, a low of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
The people of Britain love their ice baths. They've bought loads of them. With the Barclaycard Platinum, they could also save with 0% interest for up to 24 months on purchases, which is a nice, warm feeling. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. with headspace to focus on more important matters, like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:33. We will talk more about the Bonnie Blue phenomenon in just a moment. First, though, slightly more important matters, far more important matters in my view. Keir Starmer last week declaring that the UK government will recognise an independent state of Palestine in September unless certain conditions are met. Conditions not on the Palestinian side, but on the Israeli side. If Israel stops the war in a way that the UK government is happy with, it might backtrack on its promise of recognition. No conditions attached to the Palestinian side. No conditions attached to Hamas. Downing Street asked 8 times today whether the release of the hostages would be a necessary condition for the UK to recognise an independent state of Palestine, and 8 times refused to say that they would. In other words, the UK might recognise a Palestinian state, presumably partly governed by Hamas, without requiring that the remaining dozens of hostages be released by Hamas, which is a decision, I'll be quite honest with you, I find completely and utterly baffling and actually completely shameful as well. Let's talk more about it with Phil Rosenberg, President of the Board of Deputies of British Jews. Phil, great to have you with us on the show tonight. Your thoughts on this? It seems that Downing Street is willing to recognise the state of Palestine even if those hostages are still in captivity. Evening.
Good evening. It's a terrible decision by our government up to this point. It rewards Hamas, it makes the release of the hostages less immediately likely, and it risks prolonging the war. All of these things, which we don't, which the government must be against, but somehow has come to a policy decision, we think in a sort of knee-jerk fashion, that has come to a direction that creates all the wrong incentives. And as I say, risks prolonging this war, keeping the hostages captive and rewarding a terrorist organisation, Hamas, for the appalling attacks of 7th October.
Because they've made conditions and demands of the Israeli side, perfectly legitimate ones in my view, about stopping the war and letting aid in and so on. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there are no corresponding obligations on the Palestinian leadership to do anything whatsoever before the UK recognises Palestine as a state.
No, that's correct, Ben. There are currently, as phrased, demands on Hamas particularly and on Palestinian Authority in terms of reform, but they are not conditions, and that creates exactly the wrong incentive structure. Hamas has already claimed over the weekend that this is a vindication of their strategy of the appalling attacks of 7th October, which is a terrible message to be sending to terrorist organisations around the world, and it's consigned the hostages to a very uncertain fate. We saw these horrific videos of the hostages emaciated, deliberately starved by their captors that were released. Aviatar David, one of the hostages, was seen, as he said, digging his own grave. It's a really, really disgraceful decision that pushes peace further away. And, you know, in a region where things are so complicated and so difficult, it's made them more complicated and more difficult.
Why do you think Keir Starmer's made that decision, if it is indeed as sort of disastrous as you think it is, Phil?
Well, up to the weekend before last, the government was maintaining position that now is not the right time for recognition. And it does seem that it's come as a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to unrest in the party. And the challenge with that is that they haven't really thought it all through. And it means that they've imposed a series of conditions that go against the stated aims of our government, which are, you know, aims that I think we would all agree with. We want to see masses of aid into Gaza, the hostages out, Hamas prevented from ever repeating 7th October, and lasting peace and security for Israelis, Palestinians and the wider Middle East. These are the right objectives. But you have to have the right conditions and incentive structures on all the parties involved to be able to get there. At the moment, with conditions only on one side, they've created a series of perverse incentives for Hamas to continue the war and claim that this is a vindication of terrorism, which is an absolutely awful message to be sending and makes us less safe here in Britain.
Would you have supported it if those conditions had been there? Because there are, I've spoken to the Jewish community, Israeli representatives as well, who say under no circumstances right now should a state of Palestine be recognised by the UK. If they had said, right, if Hamas lays down its arms and releases the hostages, then we will recognise a state of Palestine. Would you have supported it in those circumstances?
The Board of Deputies has for a long time supported the two-state solution, which in the right moment means, yes, the recognition of a Palestinian state alongside a secure Israel. But we've said that it needs to meet certain conditions. For example, it cannot reward Hamas terrorism. It cannot make the Palestinian Authority continue to refuse to come to the table. They've been offered a Palestinian state four or five times already, and they've said no each time. And it has to be able to respond to the creation of a real state, not just a fictitious one. It has to actually lead to the creation of a Palestinian state. Merely recognising it doesn't actually bring the state into being. So what we've had here is the trade of a theoretical possibility for a series of actual harms. You know, the reason, Ben, that people are really upset here in general terms is not because there isn't a theoretical recognition of a state. It is that people are dying in a horrible war, that there are real hostages in real tunnels, real people in real difficult situations in Gaza. That's
people,
the thing.
People starving in Gaza, yeah. Phil, appreciate your time this evening. Thank you very much for coming on and talking to us. Phil Rosenberg, President of the Board of Deputies of British Jews. You've got thoughts on that? 03456060973. Why on earth, at the same time as putting conditions on the Israeli government, absolutely rightly, by the way, would the UK government not also demand that Hamas releasing the hostages, innocent hostages, be a precondition of recognition? Why on earth would they not do that? Baffling to me. 11:40 the time. Let's come back to your calls. For now, on Bonnie Blue, what is it about Bonnie Blue that seems to inspire such strong feelings, most of them negative? And what does she tell us about our society? To Croydon tonight. Well, Sophie's calling. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, Ben. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Oh, no, you're good, because I was listening to you.
I'm fine, thank you, Sophie. Glad you called in tonight. Talk to me about Bonnie Blue.
I've been working from home today. I've been listening to you, not you, but like LBC all day, and I've had an influx of male callers and their opinions. I just want to give like a feminine stance.
Oh, Sophie, I'm so sure I agree with you, and I really want to hear what you've got to say, but I'm struggling because your line's breaking up a little bit. So we'll see if we can get that sorted for you and get you back on as soon as we possibly can. In your own right, Jacqueline in Crouch End. Lovely to talk to you as well. Hi.
Lovely to talk to you as well, Ben. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I have mixed views about Bonnie Blue. First of all, I wonder if this was the other way around, if this was a guy in his 20s who was doing exactly what she's doing. So he was going around to universities. He was trying to get young girls who were barely legal. He was then trying to sort of put out the call for their mothers to also be in the lineup and find that all so okay. We would be up in arms about it.
Would we?
We would.
Because there's long been categories of porn that do that, Jacqueline, basically. And that's what the government is today saying, well, actually, because of Bonnie Blue, finally, maybe they'll ban it, which I'm all in favour of.
Yeah,
personally.
That would be amazing. But if they were doing it the way she's doing it, so if we saw lines and queues of young girls, 16 or 17, we would be up in arms about it. This does go on in the porn industry, but we're not seeing it the way she's doing it. The way she's doing it is completely different. I think there's a vulgarity to it with her. I don't understand why she's being interviewed by very good journalists.
Do you know?
I don't know.
I mean,
I'd
happily interview
her.
I'd happily have her on the programme. I think they're getting the bottom of what it is she does, why she does it, and why she has become such a phenomenon.
From my perspective, she's making it look like it's okay and that a woman can take 1,000 men in 24 hours. So that's what she's saying. So she's saying to all the weirdos out there, all the men out there that have sick fantasies, that a woman can sleep with 1,000 men in 24 hours and she'll sit with a dressing gown on and she'll be fine. How is that okay?
So the worry is that she will inspire other women to try and do something similar?
No, the worry is that she's telling men that women can take that. That women can take that. I saw her interviewed recently on a podcast, and somebody said to her, but, you know, does it worry you that you're sleeping with rapists, you're sleeping with paedophiles? Well, you could be. And her reply to that was, well, let them come to me. I think that I'm stopping them from maybe raping somebody. So come to me, do it with me.
I must say, Jackie,
in what?
Does that make sense? Yeah, I agree. The way that she dismisses, you know, when you hear Lily Phillips, who's another sort of person in a similar category interviewed, you do get the impression that she has thought through this stuff and that she sort of, you know, has an answer. Whether it's a convincing answer is debatable. But with Bonnie Blue, I mean, the impression that you get, and it might be unfair, is I am making a lot of money off this. This is what I want to be doing, kind of, you know, to hell with the consequences.
Well, to hell with the consequences for her, fine. But they're not just
That's what I mean. To hell with the wider consequences. You don't get the impression, might be wrong, this might be unfair, but I don't get the impression that she's really thought through whether what she is doing is as dangerous as a lot of people think it is.
But the thing is, how has she not thought that through, Ben? She's interviewed by top journalists. She's speaking to people constantly, or, you know, people who are trying to go a bit deeper with her when they talk to her. How has she not? And she has parents. So, you know, really, what parents, what mother is okay with that?
But I guess...
What father is okay with that?
I guess the partly the answer to that question is that charge, this kind of, this responsibility, this social obligation, isn't levelled at the many, many men behind the multi-billion pound porn industry in this country who are also doing an awful lot of damage.
Oh, I know.
And we don't demand this sort of... We don't set the bar as high for them.
I don't know if it's about setting the bar as high. I think that's another world. What she's doing is in on our streets. So these guys are all queuing up with their masks on our streets. So you could walk past that. They're outside.
Yep.
They're not all inside. So you could walk past that knowing that all these guys were gearing themselves up to go in and have sex with her.
Yeah. But what's wrong with that?
Absolutely appalling.
Why is that appalling?
It would make me feel physically sick.
Why?
I don't feel for her.
Why is it
I'm
appalling?
I'm a woman, and I don't feel for her. I think that she knows exactly what she's doing.
So who do you feel for?
I don't think there's anything going on there behind that. You know, there's issues there. I think she knows what she's doing. That would make me feel sick.
What?
It would make me feel sick that a woman was sleeping with 100.
What? But Jacqueline,
or,
why?
Sorry,
why? Why does that
men?
Make you feel sick?
Physically.
Why?
Physically, Ben.
I know. A lot of people agree with you. I totally get it. But we.
Yeah.
But why? Why do we feel so strongly about it?
Because it's maybe because it's a woman.
So it's sexist.
And our bodies, just the trauma of that.
Right.
The trauma of that. There are women all over the world being raped by several men, and it's horrific. And Bonnie Blue is in a room waiting for 1,000 men.
Well, yeah, but she's consenting, so I don't think it's fair to say she's sort of promoting rape. But I do take your point about the difference between men. It being slightly different for a woman to do that for compared to a man. It's physically more difficult biologically. I take that point. Jacqueline, thank you very much indeed for calling. And loads of calls coming on this. More on those to come. Just after this, Ben Kentishere, the time now is 11:46.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Growing crisis concerning illegal arrivals, asylum seekers, migrants to this country in the growing numbers, and of course the £6 million a day cost. This as the Home Secretary announces £100 million of extra funding to crack down on some of these issues. Labour MP and Minister of State for Border Security, Dame Angela Eagle.
If we fall out with the French and we don't cooperate with the French in policing the borders, then more people will come across. Well, the French...
How could it be any worse? Well, they're giving them money for nothing.
Nick, this is not true.
But what are they doing?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated now, they're doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18+ UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Kate's just off to work after sleeping in the best bed in the business. And my word, doesn't she look ready for anything. Something about her smile is just brighter. Her eyes seem glintier. And she just feels so much more Katie-er. Of course, it's no surprise, really, because last night she slept at Premier Inn. And she got up to 15% off with Business Booker. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. T's and C's apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
What about this then? What about this WhatsApp from James in Newcastle? Ben, just because something is unfamiliar or different doesn't mean it's disturbing. Bonnie Blue isn't doing anything to harm anyone. She's just being herself. If we label people as disturbing simply for not fitting into a narrow mould, we are encouraging intolerance instead of understanding. Everyone has a right to exist as they are. Different response from this person called Eclipse. Presume not your real name. Apologies if it is. Eclipse. Hi, Ben. She is teaching young men that they can expect sex anytime, any place, anywhere from women. In one of her videos, she says that they owe sex to their husbands. She's also said in the documentary that she's been sexually active since the age of 13. Well, again, I'm afraid, you know, we can kid ourselves, but she certainly isn't alone in that, is she? Back to your calls. We've got Sophie back in Croydon. Sophie, I think on a better line. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, that's better.
I'm back.
Far right, carry
on. Hello. I was just going to say, like, from a woman's perspective, I feel, like, just to say that I'm 35, I'm not, like, you know, I've lived a little bit of a life. I feel like she is, despite what a lot of people that have called in today and said, oh, she's not a businesswoman. She's an entrepreneur. Like, she's making money. It takes a lot to create this content, to make money from it, for the PR. And I think it's drilled into women a lot now to support yourself, to provide for yourself, to make sure that you have, you know.
Sophie, are you still there?
Oh, sorry. I thought my phone went down.
No, you're still with us. So you, for you, she's what? She deserves kind of almost respect for being so successful.
No, I'm not saying that. Because also, I do feel like it is quite a dangerous rhetoric. The way that she's playing into... She's rage baiting the nation.
Yeah.
She's rage baiting men
to
monotonize.
Yep.
Like her... the work she's doing, like, she knows what she's doing. She's not silly.
She's incredibly good.
This is gaining views. This is gaining... Look, she's on LBC. We're having a topic on LBC
She's incredibly good at self-promotion. Absolutely genius.
Like, if you look at people like Jordan, like Jodie Marsh, they're not stupid girls.
Yeah.
Like, they have made lives and have bought houses and cars and Range Rovers. And they're doing it because they know that they can earn money from it. And I think it's important as well to acknowledge the fact that a lot of the men are like, oh, we feel sorry for them, or like, oh, they're so non-virtuous, or oh, women should be virtuous. That actually, sexuality for women has been claimed by men for millennia. It's been used against us. It's the one currency that we have that's free that we can use. Mm. And actually, a lot of women are reclaiming it. And there's a lot of sex workers that make good money, a lot of single mums that don't have time to go and work outside of the, you know, looking after the kids, that can work from home and do this stuff. I think it's very nuanced, because I don't believe that what she's doing with the whole 1,000 men is like, you know, that to me, that's you know, teeter on the edge of, you know, that can be detrimental.
It's attention grabbing. It is absolutely attention grabbing.
But the attention grabbing, Ben, is what is making her money.
Absolutely. But I think that's part of what we don't like about it. It is this kind of doing the most extreme thing you can possibly think of, pushing the boundaries as far as you possibly can, even up to the point where you're now potentially going to have the government changing the law, partly because of you, because makes you rich.
But my point is that there is one side of things where I think women should be allowed to reclaim their femininity and their sexuality and monetize it on their terms, of a sane mind, to make money as they wish. But on the other side, and actually thinking about her as a person, I mean, I'm 35. There's things I posted when I was 25 that I wish I could delete. Well, I can delete because I'm not like, I don't have the digital footprint of a famous person.
What sort of
so she might come 10 years down the line and maybe get married and have kids and be like, oh God, I wish I could delete. She cannot delete that. That digital footprint that she's made is non-biodegradable. So I think it's a lesson to everyone that actually there's one thing claiming your sexuality and monetizing it, but also the fact that that's never going to go away.
There's a
you
balance.
Have to live with that
There's
for
a
life.
Balance to be struck. I hear you, Sophie, completely. And she potentially takes it too far with us. Appreciate your call, Sophie. Great call, actually. Glad we got you back on a slightly better line. Thank you. Let's talk to Mary in Birmingham more about this. Mary, I don't know if we've got some theories, I think, kind of floating around with us tonight about why we don't like it. And I don't like it. I'm with a lot of people who don't like it. Why do you think people have an issue with it?
Well, for me, when you asked that question, I did have to think, why don't I like it? What is it?
Yeah, it's a hard one to answer. I don't fully know why I don't like it.
I think it feels like we've taken a step back, because I think with things like the Me Too movement, you know, women speaking about harassment on the street, rape being normalised, not prosecuted, not, you know, victims not being listened to. Then you had the whole Gisele Pellico. You had all the work Jess Phillips has done. You know, you had the association with what Wayne Cousins did and what he was doing online beforehand or weeks beforehand. And now this.
What's the link between all that stuff, Mary, which I obviously well beyond the pale, appalling stuff, and a woman consensually having sex with an awful lot of men and making an awful lot of money out of it?
Because a lot of people will misinterpret it. Yes, you can quite comfortably sit there and say, oh, but it's consensual, but it is. Will make its way out into the dormant misogynist in...
But is that on her? Is that if people draw conclusions from her work that isn't what she is actually doing, is that on her rather than them?
Well, I think people should be responsible for the content they put out, and I think it's great, actually, that the government are now putting in laws about... not having
this barely legal,
which always grosses me out. So maybe that is her, you know, her legacy.
What about
I feel a bit sorry for her.
Not alone in that. A lot of people say that. I mean, she says she's loving life. She wakes up every day excited. She's making millions of quid. Why do we feel sorry for her?
Well, I hate to break it to you, Ben, but I think a lot of sex workers and online influencers lie.
Maybe she's lying, but I haven't seen any signs so far that she is sort of thoroughly miserable.
But she's a good actress. She knows how to play the game, so to speak.
Jack says, Ben, to put it simply, it encourages men to act in exactly the way they shouldn't be acting. What about this comes in from Donnie, Mary? Give me your thoughts on this, if you would, just briefly. Do we dislike her because we're jealous of her, asked Donnie.
Oh, God, no. Oh, I feel sorry for her.
Not jealous
I really
of her?
Do. No.
Not at all?
No.
Do you think people are?
What about what?
Money, the status, the fame? Don't know.
Well, I know more than anyone. Well, than a lot of people. Money doesn't buy me happiness.
Yes,
okay.
That's true. But she is. She's making more money in a month than most of us can dream of making in many, many years. Maybe there is a degree of envy. Thank you, Mary. Appreciate the call. I think Ollie in Wembley might have the final word on this one. Hello, Ollie.
Hi. Hello. Evening.
Hi. Thoughts, sir?
Yeah, just wanted to, I guess, drop my penny's worth. I actually think Bonnie is sort of like an apex predator from a female sexuality point of view.
She's a predator, okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at her behavior, her mannerisms, she's almost wearing this with pride and basically almost daring people.
But she's very successful at what she does.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I handed to her. She's posting pictures of, I think she bought a Ferrari or whatever she's doing.
She's doing well for us. I guess that's what she's proud of, Ollie.
Yeah,
she's, in her industry, she's been arguably the most successful person of all.
But the thing is, she's almost representing what we fear most for our daughters and
which is
even mums. I mean, you can't be sleeping with so many men without right. it having taking a toll on you at the end of the day.
But I don't buy that the feelings that we have about her is out of genuine concern for her. Why can't she be sleeping with 1,000 men if that's what she wants to do?
Oh, no. My standpoint, I'm quite agnostic. She can do whatever she likes.
Right.
The female biology is different to the male biology, and it takes a toll.
Well, that's on her. If she chooses to do if that is that a toll that she is willing to pay to get the money that she is getting every single month, then none of our business, is it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm a spectator. I'm watching from the...
Ollie, or are you literally a spectator?
No. I'm just watching out of interest and just
Fair enough.
No, when I say watching, but it's like she's basically taken almost a masculine stance on a female point, or just like she can have
as many. Maybe that's what we don't like. Maybe at the last minute, Ollie, we've nailed it. She's not acting like we expect a traditional woman to act.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she's going against the grain, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Maybe she is tearing up the idea, she certainly is tearing up the idea of what it means to be a small, kind of, you know, reticent, chaste, Christian woman that was embedded in this society for centuries even. And maybe as far as we've come, we're still not quite ready to be confronted with it in the way that Bonnie Blue confronts us with it. Because we still have this, I think, largely outdated, very Christian idea of what women should be. We say we don't, but maybe Bonnie Blue is a sign that actually we do. Ollie, great call to wrap us off. Thank you very, very much indeed. Let's move on after the news at 12. Jeremy Hunt today says people with anxiety and depression should go back to work. It's in their own good because all they need in most cases is a bit of social connection. If you suffer from those conditions, is he right?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. The Prime Minister has promised to restore order to British borders as a new migrant returns deal with France comes into force. The so-called one-in-one-out agreement will see some small boat arrivals sent back to France under a pilot scheme. Meanwhile, the UK will accept an equal number of migrants with ties to Britain if they have not attempted an illegal crossing before. But the independent migration expert Zoe Gardner told LBC the system won't work.
If your safe route to come to the UK is dependent on somebody else risking their life in the Channel and then being detained and returned again, then, well, essentially, as soon as it starts to work and people don't go in the Channel, in theory, well, then there's no more places on the safe route.
32,000 homes have been left without power in Scotland, with the country hit by major travel disruption due to Storm Floris. Winds reaching more than 120 miles an hour brought down trees onto roads and railways earlier. Aidan McGivens from the Met Office.
These are exceptional wind speeds for August. It's difficult to find similar strength storms going back decades. So these could be some of the strongest wind gusts ever recorded, even in a windy part of the country, for the summer.
A four-year-old's died following an incident at Waterworld in Staffordshire. Emergency services were called to the indoor water park in Hanley just after 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, where they found the girl in a critical condition. She died a short time later. An investigation into her death is now underway. Officers investigating reports of an alleged assault at St Pancras station a week ago have arrested a 42-year-old at Luton Airport. The man from Bedfordshire had been on an incoming flight from Faro and will now be questioned. It comes after a video emerged appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson walking back and forth next to a man lying motionless on the ground. And MI5's current director general says the organisation's first female head created a legacy that continues continues to this day. Dame Stella Rimmington has died at the age of 90. LBC weather heading into a windy morning in the north of England and Scotland with sunny spells and scattered showers. Mainly dry and breezy in the south with some sunny spells too, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm James Kitchen.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
At 12.03 is the time. It's Tuesday morning. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Very good morning for joining me here on the programme. Jeremy Hunt, former Health Secretary, the latest Westminster politician to come out in the last couple of days with a, I think, fairly ignorant statement about what it is like living with anxiety or depression. He is the latest leader, latest senior politician, and this is a cross-party consensus now, to come out and say that people with those conditions should not be being signed off work because it's in their own interests if they stay in the office or stay in the workplace and carry on with their jobs. I want to hear from you this hour. I want to talk to you. If you are or have in the past suffered with anxiety, suffered with depression, let me tell you what Jeremy Hunt says, because I want your response to it. I want your response to it as somebody who has one of those conditions or has had one of those conditions. And I want to know whether you think he is right or not. Here's Jeremy Hunt. I do worry that we are over-medicalising it. Everyone has trauma, bereavement, sometimes losing their jobs. That is not the same as mental illness. He says, I think it's immoral. We are signing off 3,000 people a day saying that they don't have to look for work. And this is the key bit I want your thoughts on. Jeremy Hunt. The majority of those have anxiety and depression, and the one thing they need is social contact. If you sign them out of the world of work, their anxiety is going to get worse rather than better. Read that again. The majority of those have anxiety and depression, and the one thing they need is social contact. If you sign them out of the world of work, their anxiety is going to get worse rather than better. I don't know if Jeremy Hunt has had anxiety or depression. It strikes me, listening to that, that he probably hasn't. Or in my view, and you might disagree, in my view, he would not be coming out and stating as fact that the one thing that people with those conditions need is social contact. Does social contact help? Largely. Is it the one thing that people need? Absolutely not. What a lot of people with anxiety and depression need is a rest, is time off the stresses and the rigours of work, is therapy, is medication for some cases, is dealing with the underlying issues of their depression, our anxiety, is dealing with their long-standing, long-term underlying trauma in many cases. So this incredibly simplistic, I think really quite stupid suggestion that if you're anxious or depressed, all you really need is to go and hang out with some co-workers, and as Jeremy Hunt puts it, your anxiety will get better. I think he's quite stunning from somebody who was in charge of healthcare in this country for quite a few years. And I say that as someone who's had times in the past where I barely get a bed because I felt, when I was younger, could barely get a bed because I felt so anxious. And the idea that all I needed was to just go into the office and work. And I did mostly. I did go into the office because I had the sort of voice of people like Jeremy Hunt probably somewhere subconsciously at the back of my mind. Go in, don't miss a day's work. I never missed a day's work. And do you know what? In hindsight, my God, it made everything so much worse. So much worse. Because what I really needed was a week or two off to get myself together, deal with the anxiety and get over it. Jeremy Hunt says the one thing, and that's his word, not mine, that most people with anxiety and depression need is social contact, and that going to work will make them better, not worse. Is that true of some people? Absolutely. Is it true of most people with anxiety and depression in this off-the-cuff, simplistic, generalised way that Jeremy Hunt claims it is? Nonsense, in my view. And that's the polite way of putting it. I've written a column about this for the I newspaper tomorrow because it really gets my back up. These privileged politicians, multimillionaires, knighthood, former cabinet job, secure job in Parliament, all the rest of it, pontificating about what people with depression and anxiety need as if they are somehow clinical psychologists or psychiatrists. What do they know? And dangerous, it's dangerous, telling doctors not to be giving out sick notes, even if that doctor is of the view from their years and years of medical training that what somebody needs is a rest and a break, and time off work. Jeremy Hunt thinks he knows better, does he? So does Kemi Badenoch, so does Wes Streeting, so does Mel Stride. They all think that people are being given sick notes too much. What do they know compared to the doctors? So I don't just think it's ignorant and stupid and misguided. I think it's really dangerous. This political rhetoric that they know better than the medics and the clinicians about what people with anxiety and depression need. Again, I'm not saying that Jeremy Hunt isn't onto something. Social contact matters. If you're isolated, everything is worse. I get that. The idea that the next step from that belief is that you should just go back to the office or the job, however bad you're feeling, for me at least, and I want your thoughts on it, is completely wide of the mark. Completely wide of the mark. And I say that as someone who's suffered with this in the past. If you have struggled with depression or anxiety, what would you say to Jeremy Hunt? If he's listening to this, what do you want him to know about you and your condition and what it means when it comes to holding down a job and getting up every morning and going to work? Is he right to say that actually more people with those conditions should be going to work, that it is the best thing you can do? Is he spectacularly wrong and misunderstanding something really quite fundamental about living with anxiety and living with depression? 0345 6060 973 for your experiences of either of those conditions. Last time we talked about anxiety, we had an incredible conversation together about what it's really like. And it's not actually talked about that much, how debilitating it can be, how disabling it can be. So let's try and do that together, shall we, between now and 1 o'clock. Just before we come to your calls on this, let's have a chat with Reem Ibrahim, Head of Media for the Institute of Economic Affairs. Reem, great to have you with us on the show. What do you make of this suggestion that people shouldn't be signed off for work with depression and anxiety? Morning.
Hi, Ben. Thank you for having me on. Look, I think that anxiety and depression, other mental illnesses, can be extraordinarily debilitating. And I think that it is extraordinarily harmful to have a system in which millions of young, healthy people are being consigned to a lifetime of worklessness. You know, about 1 million people have been signed off on universal credit since lockdown. Between 2021 and 2022, there was an NHS Confederation report that showed that there are about 63,000 people that went from being economically inactive because they were students to then being economically inactive because they were signed off as long-term sick. Now, I think we've got to think about this from the perspective of the individual. If you are suffering with anxiety and depression, where is the evidence the best thing for you is to be told by the system, you should just stay at home, you're not good enough
to work? It's not the system. It's not the system. You would have to get a sick note from a clinically qualified medic who would make that informed decision about whether or not they thought it was in your best interest to take time off work. Those are the people that should be making the decisions, Reeb, shouldn't it? Not the politicians.
Unfortunately, as you've just said, those clinical psychologists are often incentivized to provide those sick notes because they know that actually it's much more likely for that individual to be able to receive those benefits. So I think the entire system has incredibly incorrect incentives. It's a huge waste of human potential. We're in a situation where millions of people, and I really care about this as somebody a bit younger that cares a lot about young people that are being consigned to entire lifetimes.
But you keep saying entire lifetimes. I'm talking about people who need a couple of weeks or a month or a few months off work. Not entire lifetimes. They just need a break. They're exhausted, they're depressed, they're burnt out, they're anxious. They need a time off, and Jeremy Hunt says they shouldn't get it.
More than 90% of those people will never go back to work. That's just the fact, right? If you go and signed off as long-term sick...
Long-term. 90% of people who take a week off because they're anxious or depressed will not end up never working again.
We're talking about... What Jeremy Hunt was talking about was people being signed off as long-term sick. That's what's happening. We are currently in a situation where millions of people... We're talking about millions of people. 21% of the working-age population are currently economically inactive. Something is going wrong, and there is no part of me that can say that that is the most compassionate thing to do. Where is the compassion in getting millions of people and being telling them, because you're depressed or anxious, you will no longer have to work, you are staying at home? You know, when somebody with universal credit and personal dependence payments and child benefit can be earning about £30,000 a year, why would they go and work? Why would they go and seek a purpose and a structure and a reason to get up in the morning?
But
in their
now
life.
You're saying these people are scroungers, really. You're not. This is. I mean, you've gone from saying it's in their best interest to saying they're gaming the system.
It's the complete opposite. They are not scroungers. They are economically incentivized to stay at home. And there is no evidence that staying at home will make your depression any better. In fact, there is evidence.
Because lots of people listen to this saying, do you know what? All I needed to cure my depression was getting away from the job that was making me thoroughly miserable, or was a chance to deal with my burnout by taking 2 or 3 weeks off. There is evidence there. There's tons of evidence. I know people who are the evidence.
When you're signed off as long-term sick, you're not counted in unemployment statistics. So you literally disappear. There is nothing compassionate about a system that allows millions of people suffering from mental illness to completely disappear. There was a really fantastic Channel 4 documentary hosted by Fraser Nelson, the former editor of The Spectator, where he actually went and spoke to those people. He said, you know, why is it that you are not seeking work? And for many of them, they were experiencing huge bouts of depression and anxiety. But once they were already on those benefits, it was extraordinarily difficult to come off, because anybody that has experienced mental health issues knows that if it has become the comfort of that situation, the comfort of those realities, it becomes extraordinarily difficult to go and seek something else. And as I said earlier, because those people were not considered unemployment statistics, nobody asks about them. Once you are signed off as long-term sick, you are deemed unable to work, so nobody ever asks about you. Tell me, what is compassionate about this system?
Reem, appreciate your time. Thank you very much, Reem Ibrahim, Head of Media for the Institute of Economic Affairs. I come back to my point. People know what is best for them. I genuinely believe, and you might disagree with this, that most people want to work and would rather be working than not. I also believe that it is for people and their doctors to decide, and the doctors mainly, whether or not they should be signed off sick. And GPs and psychologists and psychiatrists, for me, know far more about that, respectfully, than I do, or Reem does, or Jeremy Hunt does, or Wes Streeting does. Let the doctors decide who is fit to work and who isn't. That's the system we have. That's the system we should have. And these politicians who think they know best, who sit on their behind their podiums and on their TV studio couches pontificating about what people with depression and anxiety need, having never experienced that, having had a day of medical training in their life, should frankly wind their neck in, pipe down a bit, and listen to the people who are trained to deal with those conditions, because those are the people who know best. Having served in the cabinet or run a business or been a special advisor or worked for a trade union does not qualify you to preach and proletize about what people with anxiety and depression need, in my view. And it is hard to avoid the conclusion, is it not, that what really motivates these politicians, and it's a cross-party group now, isn't genuine concern and regard for the millions of people with those conditions. It's terror. It's terror about the rising cost of the benefit bill. And they are dressing up their desire to cut spending on disability and incapacity benefits as concern for the people receiving them. And I don't buy it. Call me a cynic, but I don't buy it. The way this conversation has gone, this is about cutting government spending more than it is about helping people suffering and struggling with anxiety and depression, in my view. Tell me what you make of what Jeremy Hunt had to say. Are people with those conditions genuinely almost always better off just going to work? Or is he so far wide of the mark, so far wide of the mark, that you think he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about? 0345 606 0973. If you've got anxiety or depression, or you've had it in the past, what would you want to tell Jeremy Hunt when he makes that claim? Come to your calls on that just after this, 12:16.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies Rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Ben Kentish.
It's 12:17. Let me come to your calls. What's it really like living with anxiety? Is the quote unquote one thing that you need, the one thing that would make you feel better, according to Jeremy Hunt, with his, let me check, 0 days of medical training, is going back to work? And it might be true of you. It might be that actually you were staying at home, you went back to work, and the anxiety went away. It might be right. There will be a lot of people for whom actually going to work, having that purpose and that routine and that discipline, is exactly what you need. There will be an awful lot of people for whom that is the opposite. Maybe it's the job you're trying to get away from. Maybe that's the source of the stress. Maybe you just burnt out. You haven't had a holiday in 3 years. You desperately need 2 weeks off. According to Jeremy Hunt, your doctor shouldn't give it to you. Is he right? 03456060973. Let's talk to Hadar. Forgive me, Hadar. Is that Hadar in Leytonstone?
Hi, it's Hadar.
Hadar, lovely to have you on the programme tonight, Hadar. Talk to me about your anxiety, if you would.
Hi, so I'm actually signed off right now as we speak. I lost both my children about 2 years ago.
Oh, Hadar, I'm so sorry.
And recently I've had a baby girl. She actually looks like one of the children that passed away.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's made me very, very anxious and is kind of triggered as to what happened before.
Of course it has. I'm so, so sorry.
And I think Jeremy Hunt's got no idea what he's talking about because he hasn't been in people's shoes. He has no idea, like, what people are going through. And my role, I'm not an office worker. I'm a train driver. So I'm not socializing with other people. I have the lives of hundreds and hundreds of people in my hands.
Yeah.
I need to be able to concentrate at work, not going through something at that particular time.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite important for people to have time off, reflect, and kind of get themselves back up and running as soon as they can.
How long have you been off work, Hadar?
I've taken just over 3 weeks off at the moment.
And is that helping? Do you feel better for it?
Yeah, I do. I'm taking counselling at the same time. So it is helping, yeah.
This is the other thing. When Jeremy Hunt says, I mean, maybe it was just an unfortunate choice of phrase, but when he says the one thing that people with anxiety and depression need is social contact, it's not true. In many cases, what they'll need, like yourself, is professional support, it's medical advice, it might be medication, all sorts of things. The idea that if you just got depression, you've got anxiety, just go back to work and, you know, have a chat at the tea station or have a chat around the water cooler and you'll be fine. It's so ignorant.
Yeah, no, I mean, myself, as a train driver, I'm alone for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Operating the train.
Yeah.
I'm not socialising with other people.
So do you socialise more when you're off work than when you're at work?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeremy Hunt's saying actually what you need is socialisation, go back to work, is for you the complete opposite.
It doesn't make sense to me because I'm not socialising at work.
Yeah.
I'm alone. And I'd say for me that would be a worse time as that's where I'm overthinking and going through what's happened, and it's not the best time if I've got, you know, thousands of lives behind me.
Yeah, I just think he's... I wonder if he knows people that have been through this directly, Hadar, because it strikes me, I don't want to make it too personal, but yeah, a lot of these politicians, they don't seem to have a clue what they're talking about when they come out with this stuff.
Like you said, he doesn't have a medical background, so he doesn't know. I'm sure the doctors know what they're talking about.
And did you have to... Sorry to jump in. Did you have to get signed off by a doctor?
Yeah, I spoke to the doctor, and the first thing the doctor asked me, what do you do for work?
Yeah.
And I told him I'm a train driver, and he was like, okay. And he goes, right, yeah, no, because I've got all my history with the GP, so they know what's happened in the past.
Right.
And they said, no, take the time that you need. Make sure you're fit and well before you go back to work. And if you do need more time off, let us know, because your role is very important.
So they listened to you, they listened to what had happened, they listened to what you've gone through. I'm so sorry again that you did go through it. And then they made an informed medical decision that the best thing in your health interest was to take time off.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeremy Hunt thinks he knows better than that.
Jeremy knows better, obviously.
So does West Street, so does Kimmy Baden, not Mel Stride. I mean, it's not just Jeremy Hunt.
Yeah, it's wrong.
The arrogance.
It's wrong.
The arrogance of them.
And then on top of that, people say men's mental health, this and that. It doesn't seem like they care.
Is that you think the impression that they're giving? That actually, there's a callousness.
A lot of people probably think that right now.
Well, I wrote in this piece I've written for Tomorrow Head. I won't sort of bang on about it too much, but I've made the point that 10 years ago, if you'd said to somebody, there's nothing really wrong with you, get back to work, you would have been thought to be really cruel and quite callous and completely ignorant around mental health. And now it's what half our politicians seem to be coming out with. Nothing really wrong with you. Best place for you. Back to work.
Just trying to just get everyone back into work. There's like people are not going through anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it makes me question their motives. Thank you, Haider. I'm really sorry again for what happened with your two little children. Hope you take care of yourself. And I hope you take the time you need. I hope you're able to ignore these politicians who think they know best for you and what's best for you, more than you do and more than your doctor does. The arrogance of it, the gall of it, telling the nation's doctors and GPs and psychologists that actually, well, I've been in the cabinet, so I know what people with anxiety and depression need. No, you don't. No, you don't. Have a little bit of humility, accept that you don't have all the answers and that the people that do are the doctors in this country. The doctors actually dealing face-to-face with patients. And trust them to get this right. Thank you, Haider. Abs is calling from Camberwell on this. Hello, Abs.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good morning, sir. I'm fine, thank you. Are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. No problem. I'm totally, what's the word? I do agree with Mr. Hunt, because I think being out and about and having focus at work, socialising, is definitely beneficial to get rid of your anxiety and depression.
Is that's your experience of having those conditions?
Yeah. Definitely, CBT also helped.
Well, this is it. It's not the only, when Jeremy Hunt says, the only thing you need is social contact. For a lot of people, it's not the only thing, is it?
No, you need a balance of different things, including I was on sertraline for a while,
So what you needed to get you back on your feet was the social contact of work, but it was also therapy and it was also medication.
Correct, yeah.
Which is true of a lot of people. So did you take time off, Avs, initially? Or did you just decide
initially,
you did?
Yeah. Initially it was 2 weeks, but I think even 2 weeks was too long for me. It gave me too much time to think.
And you found you were happier and better off when you went back to work?
Exactly, yeah. I think, there's different types of depression and anxiety and different levels of anxiety and depression. So everyone's different.
In my case,
I needed to get back to work and normal routine ASAP, really.
Mm.
You've got to change the way you think when you're anxious.
But being around people at work helped you to kind of get back on your feet.
That's right, definitely, yeah.
I have to hear you. And when you say everyone's different, you've nailed it. And they've absolutely nailed it. And that's why it so frustrates me so much that there's this generalisation. The vast majority of people with anxiety and depression will be better off at work. Says who, Jeremy? What academic study are you citing there? What expert voice are you referring to when you make that claim? Because for Abs it worked brilliantly. It was absolutely what Abs needed. For Haider, it was going to be opposite. My experience, worst thing I did was just ploughing on and going to work when I was feeling that way. Worst thing, but it's so much worse. I think if I had taken a week off, I genuinely would have been fine. And it went on months because I refused to give myself any time off at all. Everybody's different. And the people that know best, you, Abs, you, Haider, me and our doctors. Not Jeremy Hunt, not Wes Streeting, not Kemi Badenoch. Thank you, Avs. Let's talk to Peter in Bristol about this. Morning to you, Peter.
Oh, good morning. I think you're one of the best presenters on LBC.
It's a privilege
to talk to you.
Oh, Peter, it's an absolute privilege to talk to you. Thank you so much. That's really kind of you to say.
So, I was signed off at the end of May with anxiety and depression with a doctor's note because my mother had been diagnosed with a brain tumour. I went to her funeral last week. So everything was very difficult. I was determined to get back to work. I received a lot of support. My boss and even his boss came round with a bag of groceries for me because they knew I was pretty much unable to leave the flat. So I was very grateful for that, and it was good to have that sort of contact.
Mm.
I was panicking about going back to work today. I was on the late shift, so I spent the morning shaking like a leaf. I decided to get into the work car park 3 or 4 hours before I was due to start work. So, you know, I knew I could be there. The minute other people started arriving, And I work with some really tough, hard people. I got hugs, handshakes, smiles, welcome back, wow. Don't worry. And from being a nervous wreck that I have been for the last 2 months it went on for, there were times I didn't think I'd make it, you know, but I was determined to get back to work. I like the people I work with. I work with a small team and we get on. We're not very much alike, but we seem to get on. And after a couple of hours, I realized I was so grateful to sort of have proper human contact with people I like. It's not the best job in the world. It's a difficult job, but just being there and interacting and getting that routine back again, it felt like a new start, you know?
It's what and you with needed. All the,
yeah, yeah. And I would not claim to speak on, you know, I can only speak for myself, but the support that I got and the friendship of the people I work with, it meant a lot today. And I feel like I'm back in the world. And, you know, I told my boss, and again, I can only speak for myself, but my boss said, well, when are you coming back? And I said, well, look, you know, I can get signed off, you know, for another indeterminate amount of months. But I don't want to know that I'm ill.
Right.
I want to know that I'm better.
And it sounds like you are on the mend, Peter.
Yeah, I
so this
definitely
was, this,
am.
Would it be fair to say this was the right timing? That if you'd gone back maybe a month ago, it would have been too much. But going back now, while I completely hear how difficult it was perhaps actually the best thing for you at this point in time.
Absolutely. The timing is most important. And you know, getting that closure from my mother's funeral. And just, but if you know, after a while, I needed that interaction, and I couldn't believe, you know, I walked in. I work in a factory. I won't name it, but you know, I walked in. The first thing I saw a mate. He just came up and gave me a hug. I then walked into the part of the factory where I work. Another person gave me a hug, and these are like tough guys, you know.
Yeah.
My boss came to see me, made sure I was okay. You know, I told them, well, look, I'm a bit physically under par from not sort of being there for 2 months. They're like, don't worry, no pressure, do what you can.
I'm so glad, Peter. That's exactly how a boss and exactly how colleagues should respond.
Yeah, if you'd had to really blown away.
And it's the social contact that Jeremy is rightly talking about, the being important when you're struggling in the way that you have been. If you'd had to work right through, as Jeremy Hunt seems to be suggesting that people struggling should do, what would that, if you just had to sort of continue going to work every single day for the last 2 months, what would that have
been? I wouldn't have been able to do that. I mean, I was shaking so much, I couldn't even hold a cup of tea or get out the door.
This is it, isn't it? People who haven't been through that level of anxiety or depression don't understand how physical it is. I think people have this idea, you just feel a bit sad, just feel a bit worried. It's just as disabling and debilitating as a lot of physical health conditions. So it's not just a case of choosing to take time off, is it, Peter? I know you totally get it. It's not a choice for a lot of people. I'm really pleased, Peter. I'm really pleased that they sort of put their arm around you collectively in the way that they should do, in the way that you deserve. And I hope that only continues. Wish you all the best, Peter. Hope you continue to sort of on that long, long path from grief and bereavement towards healing and happiness again. You take care of yourself, Peter. Thank you very much indeed. Still to come, lots more of your calls on anxiety. 03456060973. Is Jeremy Hunt right that actually staying at work, going back to work, social contact is exactly what people with anxiety and depression need? Or is it far more complicated than that? And
as I look ahead with a young daughter about to start school, I've decided I don't want to miss any more of these precious early years of family life.
Scotland's Deputy First Minister, Kate Forbes, is standing down as a member of the Scottish Parliament to focus on being a better parent. Is this a sign that it's still impossible to be a good parent and have a successful career? Talk more about that in a couple of minutes as well. Let's get the latest news headlines first at 12:31 with James Kitchen.
The Prime Minister has promised to restore order to British borders as a new migrant returns deal with Paris comes into force. The so-called one-in-one-out agreement will see some small boat arrivals sent back to France under a pilot scheme. 32,000 homes have been left without power in Scotland, with the country hit by major travel disruption due to Storm Floris. Winds reaching more than 120 miles an hour brought down trees onto roads and railways. And officers investigating reports of an alleged assault at St Pancras station a week ago have arrested a 42-year-old at Luton Airport. It comes after a video emerged appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson walking back and forth next to a man lying motionless on the ground. LBC weather heading into a windy morning in the north of England and in Scotland, with sunny spells and scattered showers, mainly dry and breezy in the south, with some sunny spells there too, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
There's digging, and then there's super digging. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods.
If you want to go big on your next meal, go Jumbo XL Big, babes. Aldi's Ecuadorian Jumbo XL prawns are super succulent. They taste well nice and grill well good. Go all fancy with Aldi, specially selected.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish.
12:34 is the time. Lots of people getting in touch, which in a way it doesn't surprise me at all, to say actually, yeah, being at work or staying at work, going back to work, was the best thing for me when I had anxiety or depression. Totally get that. Everybody's different. And a lot of this, I think Hayder was right, wasn't he? A lot of this is about the type of work you do. If you, like Peter, you go back and you've got a really good boss and you've got colleagues that support you and you've got that positive social contact, great. I can absolutely see how that helps. Jeremy Hunt's right. Social contact matters when you're struggling with any mental health condition. But what about Hayder, who drives trains for a living? Are we really going to tell people that are delivery drivers right now, cycling around in the rain and the wind, suffering with anxiety and depression, that that's the best thing for them? Or sitting in a security booth right now alone for the next 8 hours, that they wouldn't be better off actually at home with their family, helping deal with their depression or anxiety? It's so contextual. It's so dependent on who you are, the work you do, whether you've got a good boss, whether you like your colleagues, the stress of the job, the loneliness of the job. All of that matters. So these sweeping statements from politicians, people with anxiety and depression are better off at work. It's as if everybody works in an office where they have supportive colleagues and a supportive boss. Just a complete failure to recognise the nature of modern work, isn't it? If you're on a 0 hours contract and you work 14-hour shifts in a workplace where you regularly get abused and your boss is horrible, does Jeremy Hunt think it's better for you to be there than it is to be at home with your loved ones? Apparently he does. Apparently he does. Because he doesn't talk about some people, he talks about the vast majority of people with anxiety and depression are better off at work. And I don't buy it. Are lots of people, for sure. Are they all, or the vast majority? I see no evidence about that statement up at all. Talk to Mark in Brighton, John's in Willenhall about that. Lots of calls coming in just a moment. Just want to pause our conversation for a couple of minutes and turn our attention to the quite interesting resignation today from Kate Forbes, the Deputy First Minister of Scotland. She says she's going to stand down as a member of the Scottish Parliament because she's sick of missing out on her children's childhood, and she wants to be around more as a mum, which is interesting, isn't it? You don't hear many politicians saying that. Let's talk about it with Gemma Fort, broadcaster, co-host of the global original podcast, The Trawl. Gemma, good morning to you. Great to have you with us. What do you make of Kate Forbes' decision?
I totally understand it, and I think it's really, really important for people to evaluate how they feel at this point in their lives and do whatever feels best for them. And I think we're all made of different stuff. I feel like every single setup is quite unique. You also, it might differ in terms of the needs that your specific children have. you know? I mean, I know people who went back to work. I mean, I work in TV, media or whatever. I have children myself. They are now 20 and 18, but I will never forget the days when I'd first had them, especially the first one, and you just think, what is this all about? And I didn't have a specific plan to go back to work. And when I did, I found it difficult. I felt quite almost out of body. You know, you've been through a lot physically. You don't sleep when you first have a child. You know, there's all sorts of changes in your body, and it can feel rather grueling. And you can go back to work and feel a bit like, my goodness me, I don't know what's easier, being at home or being here. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong. And I think that is the point with this particular story. And being a front-facing politician in a very high-powered, stressful job, you know, I can understand that it might feel like one or the other. If you're going to do that job properly, you're probably going to do very long hours and very intense. And so, yes, you are going to miss a lot of those early years, and perhaps also you don't feel like you're going to do the best job of your life in that moment. And maybe it's time to just concentrate on home and come back later.
And I know a lot of people in those sorts of jobs, they do look back. I've spoken to cabinet ministers and people who look back and say, love the job, you know, best thing I ever did. But I really regret that I missed so many school plays and parents' evenings and bedtimes and so on. It's particularly a problem for women, isn't it, Gemma? I mean, is the sort of the Kate Forbes example proof that in this country still, it's almost impossible, if not very, very difficult at least, to be a woman and a mum and have a career?
I mean, we've progressed a bit, right? We have definitely progressed a bit. But what really jumps out at you is that I don't think I've ever heard a male politician or a male CEO say, I am standing down to spend more time after the children at home. I just can't remember that. And I also remember, I'm old enough to remember, do you remember Nicola Horlicks, who was in the papers all the time because she was like FTSE 100 and had six children. And she was branded at the time, she's a huge figure in the city. And it was all like, how does she do it? Wonder Woman, Superwoman. People never write about men like that either. They could have 10 children and people just wouldn't bat an eyelid. They just assume that they're being looked after at home while they go and do their job.
By mum or by a woman. Because it's
A nanny or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
It's still seen, if we're really honest as a country, it is still seen collectively by too many people, really, as a woman's job to raise the children. We've come a long way, but we don't think we're there yet, because I was just thinking when we were talking, Gemma, if a male politician or a FTSE executive did come out and say, do you know what, I'm throwing in my high profile job to be a full-time dad, I think people would find that far more surprising than what Kate Forbes has said today.
I think they would too. I think it would be the topic of debate on every single program for about 3 days. It would be the headlines. It would be, you know, we would be discussing it ad infinitum, because it would be so unusual. But however, within my social group, for instance, what I think has happened now is because the social contract, like, to an extent has broken. I don't think people with young families, unless you're extraordinarily wealthy, can survive on one wage anymore. Yeah. So we're talking about very sort of high powered people here. But if you look at sort of like most folk and most people who earn a pretty good wage, there isn't any choice at all.
Gemma, thank you very much. Gemma Ford, broadcaster, co-host, well worth listen of the global original podcast, The Trawl, 12:41. The time, Ben Kentish here with you this morning. As always this time of night on LBC, let's talk to Mark in Brighton.
Hello.
Mark, about anxiety. How are you, Mark?
I'm a bit of a pickle, to be honest with you.
How are you, Mark? Tell me, what's going on?
Well, so like I'm a teacher, and like you know, most teachers would tell you, "Oh, I love blooming August because it's summer holidays." But I hate the summer holidays.
Do you? Why?
Because I miss teaching. I just don't like the holidays. Yeah, yeah.
Is it
the guy that says that you know, everyone should get back to work and stop being anxious and everything is talking nonsense, I think.
But you're saying actually being at work is good for your mental health.
It is, and ironically, I've had quite a bit of time off from being ill.
Right, from having mental health.
Love being back at work. Yeah, yeah.
When you were off, that was, if you don't mind me asking, was that with mental health problems?
Yeah, definitely.
Did you find that being off helped?
I'm sure people can't identify me, but yeah,
I'm sure they
won't. One of my students ended their life last year.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, really affected me.
And so it did.
I've become kind of alcohol dependent because of that.
Right.
But I'm seeking help. I'm seeking help for that alcohol dependency. Blimey, I'm giving far too much information on
the
radio.
That's all right, Mark. No, just you say as much as you feel free, as you want to share. Did you feel that the work, did you feel that taking time off helped?
I'm hoping so. But because I'm not, because it's the school holidays, I haven't got that work support there.
So it's a bit of a sort of, it's a bit of a bind because you need the time off, you need a bit of a break, but actually you miss the work, you miss the job.
Mm.
That's the pickle you were talking about. I hear you. And not too long. What is it? Another 3-4 weeks?
5 weeks. 5 weeks.
Five weeks still. Can you do any sort of tutoring, or could you do anything in the meantime to get a bit of contact with people?
It's got to the point where I can't physically do anything.
Right. Because of your mental health.
Yeah.
So do you think you'll be able to go back in September?
That's the thing I'm really, really worried about. I'm really worried about.
Well, you just got to see how you are then, Mark. You just got to see how you feel at the time.
I went to a place in Brighton today and spoke to them, and they're saying that they don't think I will be able to get back.
And how did you feel about that?
So I work in, I'd like to say, I don't want to say too much, but I work, it's a 40-mile drive. I work 40 miles away from Brighton.
Right, so that's a stress in and of itself. It's quite a commute.
Yeah, and I have to drive, so it's not, you know. And that's the one thing I don't do is drive, drink and drive.
So when you say you might not be physically able to do it, is that because of the drinking?
Yeah.
So you need to get that under control before you can go back and teach.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's been brought on by the stress of work.
And this is the cycle. The work's caused the drinking problem. The drinking problem's been you can't work, but you want the work because you enjoy the work, and then the drinking problem gets worse.
Absolutely.
I hear you, Mark. You take care of yourself. I'm glad you're getting support. Good on you. And I really, really hope it helps. And you take as long as you need, because that's it's a tricky one. And I hear completely the bind you're in. Thank you, Mark. It's complicated. It's complicated. The bottom line is it's complicated. Too complicated for politicians to come out with simplistic statements about what is best for people with depression or anxiety. Because what is best for one person is not going to be what's best for somebody else. And who knows best what is best for them? I say it again. The person themselves and their doctors and the experts that are treating them. Not Jeremy Hunt or Wes Streeting or Kemi Badenoch or Mel Stride. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you think the doctors are getting it wrong and actually people have no idea what's in their best interest. 03456060973 is the number to call. This comes in from Lucy. I have suffered from generalised anxiety disorder for the whole of my adult life. Though I've sometimes dreaded the thought of going into work, I always feel much better once I did. The worst thing I could have done was to stay at home. And this comes in from Ian. I managed a person with high anxiety. We sat down, worked out a plan to keep them busy. And secondly, when they were feeling overly anxious, who they could talk to and how to support them. They unfortunately switched to a new manager and they've now been off for 3 months. Again, point in principle. It matters who your boss is, how much support you get, whether you like your job and who you're working with. Different for each person, isn't it? More of your calls to come on that in just a couple of minutes' time. Ben Kentish here with you this morning on LBC, where the time is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
The Home Secretary has been accused of pandering to racism and stoking the possibility of riots after she said she'd publish league tables of criminals by crime and nationality. This morning, do you support the move?
Richard Spur on LBC.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's KUFLINK. NK. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
At 12:47, straight back to your calls about anxiety with Michael in Streatham. Morning to you, Michael.
Hi, Ben. Hi. Well, I don't know where to start with this. As I'm speaking to you, I'm reading the quotes from Jeremy Hunt, and I'm aghast with it. I think it's a rather callous series of statements that he made. One of them is the majority of people who have anxiety or depression need social contact. If you sign them out of work, their anxiety is going to get worse rather than better. That's not true. Where does he get these statistics
Michael,
from?
You actually missed, for me, the worst bit of that sentence, which is when he said it's the one thing that the majority of them need.
The one thing.
So if all the people in this country with anxiety and depression just had a bit more social contact, we'd all be fine. Is that really what he's saying?
Well, it is. Ben, I had a breakdown in 2012 for which I was hospitalised.
Right.
I'm not mentally ill, and I wasn't before, but I had a breakdown because of a series of events that happened to me. And the last thing that I needed was social contact. I couldn't move from the living room to the kitchen. I had to have nurses come and visit me twice a day to make sure that I was okay. When you have a breakdown, it's the most terrifying experience. It's beyond words, you know, you can't describe it. And so I'm so compassionate, you know, in my endeavor to support people that are undergoing this kind of barrage of, well, it's like an attack on people with mental health.
By politicians.
And the thing is, you know, I would rather have it's over stated and understated. You know, I would rather have doctors sign more people off than necessary than under, because this is a very perilous condition that people are having to live with.
Yeah.
It's awful, and I just think that we need to have more compassion, and there's a risk now that we have this kind of mob mentality, you know, with anyone that's being signed off from work gets attacked for, you know, stealing from the state.
That's where we're going. We are going down the road of people who are off work because they are severely depressed or suffering severe anxiety being made to feel that they are somehow taking the easy way out by not getting up, going into work every day, even if it's the worst thing for them, because that is the impression that a cross-party group of politicians is now starting to give. It's dangerous, Michael, isn't it? It's dangerous, I think.
It is, and I think it's very shallow. You know, when you dig deeper into these people's lives, I think the majority of them have undergone things that these people making these decisions have never experienced in their lives, and they have no idea of what goes on the ground, you know, with normal people. And let's not forget, you know, the pandemic, that brought to light a lot of issues that people had with anxieties and depression.
Yep.
And so it's augmented this state of anguish that people had lying dormant in them. And so I think we are seeing more people going and receiving help and medication for these conditions as a result of the pandemic.
Which is a good thing. It's a good thing that people are coming forward, at least. Not a good thing that people are suffering. But we don't want people to feel that they have to suffer in silence like they did for generations, because they turn on the radio, the television, they open a newspaper, and all they see is prominent politicians and our political leaders basically telling them there's nothing really wrong with them.
Indeed, and being judged.
And being judged, completely. Mike, great call. Really glad you called it. How are things now? Are you doing all right now?
I'm very well now. You know, I'm living. I mean, I had to stay off work because I'm a professional musician,
right.
And I couldn't perform at the time, so I was off work for 4 months after the breakdown, and I gradually went out into the world very, very slowly. It took a long time.
When you say you couldn't, just describe it for me. If Jeremy Hunt says, "Well, you could, and it would have been better if you had gone to work and performed," what would you say to him?
Do you know? Speaking with a person was a horrendous experience for me. Speaking with a stranger, it was as if, I know this sounds dramatic, but it was as if I had every layer of my skin peeled off and I was raw.
Yeah.
I couldn't watch TV. I remember sitting in my living room, Ben, and thinking, I need a glass of water, and trying to plan how I would get from my living room to the kitchen to actually make that for myself, because I was so, my mind, my heart was so wrapped in pain that I couldn't take one step in front of the other. It was a nightmare.
Michael, it's a brilliant answer. It's a brilliant description of what it's really like being in a mental health crisis and how physical and physically debilitating it is. People, I think, just think it's a feeling. You just feel very sad. You feel very stressed. And what you've illustrated so eloquently is how much worse than that is, how physical it feels, how you feel frozen. There's days when I felt like getting out of bed was an achievement. I get it completely. Michael, thank you. I'm glad things are better now. And Jeremy Hunt thinks that all Michael needs is a bit of workplace banter and he would have felt better. Really? John's a new caller in Willenhall. John, welcome to you.
Hiya, Ben. Good morning.
Morning, John.
Morning. Ben, I've been listening to some of the callers, and it just chimes so true with my own experience. My wife was diagnosed in 2020, the 19th of March, with stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
Oh, John.
It was metastasized, so she got secondaries in her lungs. And obviously the country went into full lockdown on the 23rd of March.
Right.
So she was diagnosed on the Thursday. We went into full lockdown on the Monday. And we just felt so isolated. The children couldn't come and visit. The grandkids couldn't come and visit. And this came after 4 or 5 years of us both looking after my mum and dad that had had dementia. They were both diagnosed with dementia.
It's an incredibly difficult time for you.
To be honest, Ben, that was a journey in itself. Because they always say with dementia that you lose the person before you lose...
Yes. You had an awful lot on your plate, and you didn't have because of the lockdown, you didn't have the people around you to support you as well.
This is the thing, Ben. Yeah. We have the social network. We didn't have the physical and emotional support from anyone.
Yeah. Did you carry on working, John?
No, because of the lockdown situation, I found the boss. I've been there. I've been working there. I'm still working there now, to be honest, Ben. I've been there 30 years.
Wow.
At the same... and I explained the situation. He said, OK, obviously, be shielding because of your wife's condition.
Right.
So I didn't work for the 6 months. I was caring for her. She passed away in September the 8th.
Sorry, John.
I went back to work, but Ben, honestly, I didn't realise what my mental state was. I couldn't turn the television on, I couldn't turn the radio on because I felt that the people that I was listening to was talking about my situation, which I put down to paranoia. I was driving to work. After I went back to work, the people that were standing in bus stops, I felt as though they could see my thoughts and they were judging me.
What did you think they were judging you for?
Like the previous caller, Ben, I thought that my entire soul had been stripped bare and they were looking at every aspect and people were judging me.
Right.
And I couldn't get this out of my head.
So you're feeling really exposed, you're feeling really vulnerable and very fragile by the sounds of it at that point, John.
Absolutely raw, yeah. Ben. And to be honest, I'd spoken to people before that had said they'd got anxiety and depression. I'd like to think that I'm quite an empathetic person. But I couldn't quite connect with them then.
Mm.
But my God.
Until that
moment.
I
never thought that anxiety and depression could be so debilitating.
How long were you off work, John?
I was off work caring for Maggie for 6 months.
Mm.
I went back to work about 3 weeks after the funeral. And to be honest, Ben, the funeral, I had to conduct everything over the phone and on the laptop.
Because of the
lockdowns. I never had any physical contact with anyone. And I've never felt so alone in all my life.
And the idea that you could have carried on working and it would have been good for you, John, that Jeremy Hunt's come out with?
Ben, I did go back to work and I tried my utmost.
Yeah.
I fell to pieces. I fell to pieces at work. They sent me home. I spent 3 or 4 days in bed, not being able to function. The previous caller, when he was talking about going into the kitchen for a glass of water.
Yeah.
I totally get that, Ben.
Absolutely. Me too.
I walked into the kitchen, I looked at the kettle, I looked at the tea bags. I've got no comprehension at all how to make a cup of tea.
It's completely crippling. When you are in that state, when you are in the midst of that illness, let's call it what it is, that illness, it's completely and utterly crippling. And the idea that Jeremy Hunt thinks it's even a choice, that even people have the ability to even get themselves to work physically, when, like John and Peter are talking about, they can't even get from one room to the other, just shows such an ignorance of serious mental health problems that I think it's actually quite scary that people like this are in charge of our health system and in positions of real power. And it's not just Jeremy Hunt. As I said, there are many, many others in that category. John, I'm out of time, I'm afraid. Really, really hope things are better now. Thank you for calling in for the first time and talking so openly and so powerfully and so convincingly about what it is like to be in that situation. I think an experience a lot of people, thankfully, haven't suffered with, but don't understand because of it. And you and Peter and Hayder and others have really, really got that across this morning. Thank you to everyone who called in. Apologies to Keith and everybody else I didn't get to. Make sure we come back to that topic because it is so important we keep talking about the reality of it. That is it from me for tonight, though, for now. I'm out of time, unfortunately. Back with you at 10 o'clock tomorrow night, though. Don't forget today's show on both Global Player and on the new LBC app. You can get that for free from your app store right now. Coming up at 4 this morning on LBC, Ian Payne. Right now, here's Richard Spur.
Morning still to come. Parents of pupils at Britain's top private schools have defied Labour's tax on their fees by prepaying before the deadline came into force. I'll be asking if you support the government's levy on the independent sector and whether, in your experience, private education is worth the cost. But first, Keir Starmer's putting pressure on police chiefs across the country to release much more information about the nationalities of offenders as unrest and frustration grows about his handling of the migration crisis. MPs and migrant charities, though, have accused the policy of pandering to racism and fanning the fires of violent protests against the accommodation of asylum seekers. So this morning, should league tables of criminals by nationality be published, or could it risk increasing the persecution of innocent foreigners in the UK?
On your radio, on the LBC app,
and
Play LBC,
leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Conservatives say just 6% of migrants will be sent back under Labour's new deal with France, which has come into force. It allows the UK to detain some small boat arrivals and return them across the English Channel. In exchange, Britain will accept asylum seekers with a link to the country. But James Wilde, who's the Shadow Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, says the Tories' Rwanda initiative was better.
Unfortunately, the government scrapped the scheme that we had. I recognise it wasn't completely up and running, but they scrapped that and we've seen the results. We've had 25,000 people arrive in the UK illegally this year already. That's a record.
Winds of more than 120 miles an hour have been recorded in the Scottish Highlands as Storm Floris battered the central belt and northern areas. More than 32,000 homes were left without power. Last night's Royal Edinburgh military tattoo was cancelled. And our Scotland reporter Rebecca Brady says there'll be other problems too.
Exam results are due to be delivered tomorrow for school children across Scotland, but we're hearing there'll definitely be delays in the Outer Hebrides, Orkney and Shetland. The transport network's been delayed around bridges and fallen trees too.
A four-year-old girl's died after an incident at an indoor water park in Staffordshire. Emergency services were called to Waterworld in Hanley yesterday afternoon. An investigation into her death is now underway. A Merseyside MP has told LBC the ongoing protests outside asylum hotels is concerning to see. It's a year since the riots which took place across the country following the Southport stabbings. Police have uploaded pictures of more than 50 people they still want to trace over the disorder. Ian Byrne is the MP for West Derby.
It is a worry about what you're seeing across the country at the moment. You know, you look at what's happening in Epping and, you know, there's an undoubted move by people to try and destabilise the country and communities. And I just hope people just obviously stick together, you know.
And officers investigating reports of an alleged assault at St Pancras Station a week ago have arrested a 42-year-old man at Luton Airport. It comes after a video emerged online appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson next to a man lying motionless on the ground. LBC weather heading into a windy morning in the north of England and Scotland with sunny spells and scattered showers, mainly dry and breezy in the south with some sunny spells too, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm James Kitchen.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Hello, good morning. The Prime Minister Keir Starmer is putting pressure on police chiefs to release more information about offenders as unrest grows over the government's handling of the migration crisis. Downing Street said all authorities from police to central government should be as transparent as possible about those people charged with crimes like rape and sexual assault. Government sources suggested that that would help rebuild public trust. On yesterday, Nigel Farage, the Reform UK leader, accused police of a cover-up over the identity of two men arrested for the alleged rape of a 12-year-old girl in Nuneaton last month. Warwickshire police have been criticised for failing to disclose that person's immigration status. Now, Nigel Farage said that rising public anger over things like migrant hotels was clearly visible at protests, which he said were taking place still across the country. The Prime Minister's spokesman said police forces should be as transparent as possible. But this morning, I would like to know whether you believe it would be useful, appropriate, safe, fair, any of the above really, to in effect publish league tables of the nationality of criminals and how many criminals of particular nationalities commit particular crimes, because this is effectively what will happen. And Yvette Cooper and the Home Office have been criticised by migrant charities and some other MPs of pandering to racism and potentially fanning the flames of violence in this country by disclosing how many foreign nationals of which nationality are committing which crimes when. 0345 6060973. Is it a policy that you approve of, or does it risk increasing the persecution and the prejudice of those innocent foreign nationals who are in this country for whatever reason. Well, Donna Jones, the National Criminal Justice Lead for the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners and Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, spoke to Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Well, this is a huge, huge problem. Not only do we have, it's estimated, 13,000 foreign nationals in Britain's prisons, but there is then now this perception that's growing from the public, as you've just heard from Andy Cook. It's the perception that often then creates problem, rioting, disorder. And there is a perception that there is a cover-up of the identity of these offenders, particularly if they are asylum seekers coming into the UK committing serious violence and or sexual offences. And unfortunately, from what we can see, it appears to be happening all the time up and down the country.
In your view, how important is it that local people are given as much information as possible?
Well, no, I think it's absolutely imperative. People do need have a right to know. And, you know, when a, let's say, for example, a white middle-aged man commits an offence and goes before the courts, there is no attempt to protect that person's identity unless, for example, it would be exposing the identity of a child victim or something that would be related. So I do think it's important that the police, the courts, and often it is the courts as well. But let's not forget that our courts are all public places. And if journalists are in court every day, the information is clearly there.
Lastly, had what reportedly took place in Nuneaton actually happened in Nether Wallop, would you have supported Hampshire Police not giving the details of the reported suspects?
No, I wouldn't, because we don't do that, and we do provide the information. If it, you know, and particularly what we have to remember here is when someone is arrested and taken to court, the information that comes through court is then owned by HMCTS, His Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Service. So the police so often get the blame for not sharing information when it's not necessarily them as the agency to share it. It is, you know, that is a court hearing, and it is available through the public court records if people go into the court and ask for it.
I think it's a very, very interesting debate, this, and it's going to be key, I think, to, you know, how people's reaction to anything the government does to improve the immigration situation fares. Because what will happen is, whether we like it or not, there will effectively be a league table. And at the top of it, we will find out that there is one particular nationality of migrant to this country that is more likely to commit an assault, is more likely to thieve, is more likely to commit rape. And they will be published for all to see in all of the newspapers.